Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey guys, this is Aaron Newworth, or at Aaron's PS3, and I've been listening to Weekend Confirmed since the beginning. My favorite moment may be the time when Jeff Cannata, 2Ns1T, decided to imitate the cliche gravelly voice character in games, which led to him going, requesting a Slurpee due to the WWE collectible cups. And that makes me always laugh. And also shout out to Del Rio, because his Weekend Confirmed music and remixes are always the glue that holds the show together, because Super Mega Worm is always fun to say.
Weekend Confirmed, number 100 starts right now.
That's like, very cool to have listeners with audio clips. It's very, very cool.
I know. I think we're going to, like, it's an idea that I've been sort of percolating that I want to bring into the show. And, like, you know, why not kick it off in 2012? There you go. Kick it off with show number 100. I'm Garnet Lee. Joining me is that man you just heard praised, 2Ns1Ts, because he's just cocky like that.
Well, I would just right at the top like to thank everybody that's been with us since episode one and newcomers alike. If you're listening, if you're still listening, we really appreciate it. It's been so much fun over 100 episodes. And I want to thank you, Garnet, and the rest of the crew here. It's really great that we made it this far and still going strong. I'm having a blast.
Pretty awesome.
You just warmed my cockles.
Whoa. Glad you had the rules on there.
They're making kissy faces at each other. It's very sweet.
Well, that's what happens after you feed each other cake.
Yeah. Provocatively.
That's how it all starts.
Provocatively. Yeah, some
of that. If you want to know more about that, you'll have to watch the pre-show video. That's all I'm going to say.
It's sexy.
It is very sexy,
it's
don't you think?
Sexy.
It's dead sexy. That's Ariel Angelotti here to my left.
Hi, everyone.
And Mr. Jeff Mattis down at the end of the table.
Howdy, folks. Thanks for listening.
And with us, we have two cakes and some beer.
Yeah.
It's a party.
It's a party.
Obviously. But as Jeff said, I want to thank you guys as well, because we're here because of you, and we want to celebrate this with you, which is why we have many more of your quick shout-outs and hellos coming up later on in the show, along with, we're going to talk about the Vita, have one right here in my hot little hand.
So, yes, you do. It's a pretty sassy little device.
Sassy?
Yeah.
Sassy?
A little sassy.
It's a little sassy. We'll have some opinions on it. We'll break it down since it's now available. Some of you who pre-ordered bundles probably already have them in your hot little hands. If not, they're going to hit stores on Tuesday.
Especially if you're in Canada.
Oh, it does. Another leak spot where they're like, they're just really soft on the release date. I mean, they just really don't
care. It's odd, right? Such a big piece of hardware doesn't really have a hard release date. It's a little sad to me.
Yeah, hey, what's that all about?
Zav? Zav here?
No.
Yeah, unfortunately, Zav unable to make it. He was going to be here with us, but his new joystick realities kicked in, and he was unable to make it to the show. So he's out. Spicer also, popped the eject cord on us.
That's okay.
It's okay. We're gonna have an awesome time.
Because
we have cake.
He got you last week, so.
Yeah, he gave me the stinky dick.
Yeah, he did.
He did.
Because he said that you don't actually love loving things.
I know.
And it's hard
to
tell.
It's fun when Spicer likes to kick me when I'm not there to defend myself. But
so you don't love loving things, evidently, huh?
I don't know what he was referring to be quite honest with you. But
well, I heard Deadly Premonition might have been involved.
Well, I did not enjoy that experience.
Well, but you love
Perhaps
loving
you
things.
Remember. I do. I love loving things. That doesn't mean I love everything. That means when I love something, I love the fact that I love it. It's great to love stuff.
Happy being happy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Except for when you're not.
Except right. for when you're not. When you're not. See, it hurts that much more because of how much I love to love stuff.
All right. This is getting silly. this is the whole
it
like.
It started silly.
You guys were gone last week. What the hell are you talking about?
But
I was gone.
I should say real quick that Spicer and I are teaming up and we're doing a show at UCB.
No way.
No way.
March 24th, midnight. You should be there. If you want to see us settle this score, he's going to.
Cage match involved?
Yeah.
I want to be there for this.
You should.
I want to referee it.
Midnight. Title as yet undetermined. We've been throwing around titles for our show, but it is it's gonna be fun.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the UCB Theater for this 3-round bout between Jeff,
yeah,
the wily one, Cannata,
We're also going to have guests. It's going to be really, I think it's really cool. And we want everybody who listens to this to be there. If you can make it to LA, UCB, midnight, March 24th. So do it.
March 24th. Don't miss it. Is there going to be freebies at the door?
Yes.
Monster trucks.
Tons of bees. They will be free.
Nice.
Everybody gets free bees.
Awesome. You can always go to the chicken place next door, which is actually really good. We used to love to do that.
Oh, it's delish.
What's the name of that place? Wings or something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, we've digressed mightily. The rest of the show is also going to contain little conversations about dice, because I was there last week. Some interesting things to talk about from dice. We've been playing some games. Mr. Kanata has played The Darkness
2. I've also played The Darkness, but not recently.
Did you believe in a thing called love?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You can tell I'm already going horribly astray. Jeff's been playing Dear Esther. What have you been playing?
I've got three titles up my sleeve.
Up your sleeve?
Yeah.
Well, are you going to tell me what one of them is?
No, I'd like to tease. It'll be a surprise.
The old sleeve tease.
Mysteries are fun. I like mysteries.
Yeah. Expose my ankles. Does that make it better?
Yes.
Okay.
And, so where should we start?
And I want to talk about Reckoning because I really like Reckoning.
Yeah, I knew you would. It's a game made for you.
Why?
It's made for the people that Skyrim is just a little too much for them. It's a little bit Skyrim-like.
Did you just look down your fucking nose at me?
No.
You did.
I don't.
It's made for the people for whom Skyrim is just a little too
much. I think that is a very...
It's got some training wheels and some wooden blocks with letters on them.
Well, it kind of does. But
That's sort of accurate, but I'm also very much enjoying it.
Me too. I'm not disparaging it.
Oh, okay.
It's just, I think it's perfect for that demographic, which is a very legitimate demographic of people.
Hold on, I have to get my drool cup replaced.
You're the one who said Skyrim is just so overwhelming and I don't know where to go.
I will give you this. It is much better than Skyrim at being a game you can jump into for an hour and leave.
And be totally fine.
It looks much more whimsical and magical.
It does bring the whimsy in a lot of ways.
It does.
And everything that's important has glowy bits,
so colorful. Colorful, glowy.
The throwing stuff at me has already started.
Fantastic.
All right, so we're going to talk about Reckoning now, obviously, since we've segued into it. How can you be so condescending about it?
I don't intend to be. As I said, I enjoy the game much more than I thought I would. I just see some flaws in it as well. I think it has some flaws for me, for what I enjoy. And I think those are some odd design decisions that I think just make the world feel a little less substantial than something like Skyrim. And I think possibly if this had been released before Skyrim or farther away from Skyrim, I probably wouldn't compare the two so directly, but it's hard for me not to because I'm still sort of playing Skyrim and it's in my head. And it bears a lot of comparison to it,
sure,
gameplay-wise, structurally.
I'd say it has lower bug count.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And it does a lot of things really, really well. And I don't mean to be negative Nancy on it because it's a game that I continue to play. I've already put 25 hours into it and I've barely scratched the surface and I'm going to play lots more. It's a game I like a lot. The combat system is very, very fun. And
considering you do a lot of combat in both games, that's a big bonus in its favor for me.
I agree. And it's much more accessible. It's a very accessible game.
I'll go you
describe accessible because I think that's an interesting way that you're saying. What do you mean? I mean, it sounds like that's another one of those I'm going to be superior in my games.
What? No, I don't mean to present that. I think Matt has said it very well in that it's a game you can jump in and play an hour of and get and not feel like you've just, oh God. In Skyrim, you jump in for an hour and you're like, oh, I didn't really get anything done. Mm-hmm. You know, I just kind of explored a little bit. And this game, it's always clear what you're doing next.
Yes. Or what else you can do.
Yes.
And you know what I'll attribute that to? Because I'll turn it around. I will attribute that to them clearly cribbing substantially off of MMO design.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because this game is very much cribbed off of the World of Warcraft MMO design, and it comes through in almost every element.
But don't you think that the game, what I got overall from the game is that it cribs from a lot of sources, and it feels like some people who really like games went, let's take a little bit from I like that game and a little bit from what I like in that game and a little bit from what I like in that game and cobble it together and make this hybrid that sort of always feels a little bit like I'm playing something else, but never really feels like it has its own cohesive voice. And that's okay. I mean, I applaud the nature of grabbing the best bits and learning from what's done right in a lot of other things. But I just don't think it ever really...
How did you feel about
cohesive.
Fable?
I think it definitely feels a little bit like Fable 2. I think it's better than Fable 3. What was the last one?
Three.
Yeah. I think it's much better than Fable 3. Fable 2 is very good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it sort of feels like it's got a little bit of like a Ninja Gaiden type thing going on. It's got a little, you know, maybe not that far, but it's got that combat system that's very accessible from a console perspective. It's got MMO influences. It's got Oblivion and Skyrim influences. It's got, you know, Fable.
But to your point, it doesn't do everything exceptionally well. Like the dialogue system for me is I'd almost wished for this particular game they had just removed dialogue choices and just given me the relevant information, because when you engage in conversation, you get, you know, the top choice is always here's the next thing you need to select to get the quest or right. move on. And the rest is all just like, do I want lore? You know, it's totally irrelevant.
So you don't.
But
like
having
that.
Said that, the lore is good.
No, it is good. I'm just saying, why give me a list of choices like that? Why not just make it more elegant in terms of how you present it to the player? So, you know, I mean, maybe not through a huge monologue, but, you know, it just seems like kind of a lazy way to convey a lot of information about the world that they could have conveyed.
So that's lazier than leaving books around that you have to pick up and read.
Well, books feel more optional. When I engage in conversation in that game, it's not a conversation. It's
the OCD kick.
I'm going through a checklist.
It's very old school, though. It's how Ultima used to be. And it's how.
See, I think that's really funny, because the whole idea of highlighting that top one in blue says, hey, do you want to just continue your quest? You don't have to ask about any of the shit down here. You don't have to do any of this. It's totally optional. You're just going to get fill in the blank stuff. If you want it, great. If you don't, fine.
Right. But it's just serving that to you.
Which is what all games. So look, this is a storytelling fundamental problem that all games have. Skyrim overcomes it by having copious amounts of books laying about all over the place that every one of them you open is a commitment of, you know, 5 to 12 or 15 pages of reading pages.
I think you're comparing apples and oranges, because I don't think the dialogue choices in Reckoning are trying to do the same thing that the books are trying to do in Skyrim. I think that the dialogue in Skyrim is trying to do what the dialogue in Reckoning is doing, and they're just doing it in subtly different ways. And in Skyrim, you're listening to people jabber on about their lives in the same amount. It's just, in Reckoning, showing it to me as a list of topics rather than sort of a flowing discussion, it just feels a little bit less. It feels more like, as you said, going down a checklist.
Yeah, tell me about tell me about that, tell me about this location, tell me. And, you know, and it's not poorly written or anything like
that. It's actually very well written.
It's engaging for what it is. I think there's a more elegant way to deliver that much exposition without giving the player the illusion that they're having a conversation. Like in Skyrim, you actually have conversation. I mean, there are branching pathways to the conversation based on how you respond. Not so much in Reckoning. It's you know,
yeah.
Accept or not. You know, do you want to do this or not?
You get to talk about everything that character knows right away. There's no discovering something that they know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's mechanistic. I think that the problem isn't the system, it's that they didn't do a good job of what would be post-production in a movie, of going back and really going through, okay, does this character at this stage of this game really need to have half a dozen other topics that they can discuss with the player right now? Because it really throws the pacing off.
It does.
But
I think the lore of the game is really well thought out and really well designed.
Exactly.
And it's not cookie cutter, as a lot of role-playing games can be, and it feels like they, you know, it definitely has comparisons to, you know, like the traitors or the Assassin's Guild or whatever. It's you know, has analogs, but I think that the universe is really well thought out and really well put together, and it's presented in a charming way, and almost all of the quests are unique and interesting and have good characterization, and I applaud the writing of the game. I think it's very strong.
I agree with you. I think that They like their quests and narrative and lore and all that canonical stuff so much that they needed someone to look at it from the outside and say, maybe we shouldn't hit the player with every facet of every faction right off the bat, because there's so many different names of characters and races and conflicting. There's different political things going on within each of the different factions. There's something going on in the world. There's something going on with the Fae. There's something going on with the bandits and the travelers. And it's like, okay, slow the hell down here. Give me a few things to like get focused on. And this, I think, also goes back to the MMO thing of, even if you're looking at the world map in Kingdoms of Amalur, it's segregated into nodes.
Yeah.
like World of Warcraft would be. And it's kind of cool because that then does make it very friendly to have that I'm going to hop in and play for an hour.
Right.
Because you can pull up a quest, look at the quest on the map, see that, oh, this quest is either contained within my node or within the node that's right next to me. I can probably go get all this done, get back, and be done with it in a nice amount of time.
Yep.
Yes, it's more game-y than Skyrim by a long shot.
Yeah.
The payoff to that is that it's much more friendly to hopping in and playing it for a little while and hopping out.
Yeah, I just think that there are a few design decisions that, for me, just make the world feel less grounded.
Okay, so you said that, so hit them.
For example, glowy bits showing you what you can touch and what you can't touch. Okay.
Skyrim does that for... Are you talking about harvesting, like, stuff?
Yeah.
Skyrim has hover over harvest.
No, it has hover over, but it's not like, oh, look, there's glowing glitter dust on the two things I can touch. There's a chest that has glowing glitter dust on it, and there's a box that has glowing glitter dust on it, and there's a plant that I can harvest. It just makes it feel cartoony and video gamey, as you said. Not being able to walk wherever I want to, I walk up into an invisible wall instead. And
the invisible walling in it is annoying as hell.
Points, yeah, exactly. It makes the world feel contained and like, oh, I'm constantly reminded I'm in a video game. And the big one for me, and this may just be my personal preference, but the big one for me is the natural character running speed. I feel like it's a little fast, and it just makes the whole world feel insubstantial because, yes, I can get around quickly, and that's great, and maybe it was necessary for the high speed of the combat system that they wanted to employ, but it just – the whole time I feel like, – especially when you're having to deal with traps, you know, like I bound into traps all the time because – I just am running so fast. It's like I'm not going to sense – I'm not – you know.
Did you turn up your detect invisible skill?
Well, I invested heavily in the detect – or what is that called? Yeah, detect hidden, I think
detect
it's called.
Hidden.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's – I'm cranked way up. And then that just becomes like, look on the minimap, and now I'm playing in the minimap. These are relatively minor gripes because it's a game that is extremely fun to play, but it never feels like I'm in a world that is – lived in, like I feel when I'm playing Skyrim. And it never feels like this is a – it always feels like I'm playing a video game.
Yeah, by the same token, though, it has the benefit of I could step away from Reckoning for a week and come back and go, oh, I know exactly what I needed to do.
Yeah.
You know, like I know what my next step is rather than Skyrim where I'm like, oh, shit, where am I? How many – I have like 50 quests open and what was I doing? And
exactly, which is exactly why it's probably great
The beginning of my conversation about Reckoning is that I'm having a blast playing the game.
Yeah.
And that to me is a core component that is really, really important. And I have fun at times playing Skyrim, but I also have times where I'm playing Skyrim and it feels tedious. And it feels like, oh, I've got to go here, or oh, I'm stuck in the middle of this and I don't know what to do. You know, or I don't know what not that I don't know what to do. It's that I don't even have a clear picture of what I might want to do as my character, what my character might want to do next.
Right.
Whereas because of the fact that this, yes, it's more mechanistic and it has more game-like components that are exposed in the way it's put together, Amalur makes up for it by letting me play the game, having a blast at it, and then the actual in-the-game play, most of what we do is combat. And the combat in the game is a blast.
I agree.
It's really, really fun. So the action combat in this game, which, you know, we had Joe Q on, who did all the combat design of this. I think it was really, really successful. You know, the quick cop-out is, oh, well, you can dodge roll out of everything. And I think that that's...
I just got Blink, which is rad. It replaces dodge. Because I'm a full wizard.
Oh, you went full... Wow, we're totally different. I'm
full
finesse. I'm full finesse.
Yeah, I'm all clothy.
And I'm going big greatsword.
Nice.
So,
I'm glad we're all having
full,
different experiences.
That's cool. Yeah. So you're full might.
Yeah, pretty much.
I got to say, dude, one of my spells is so rad. I can mark up to 5 guys and then have them explode. So I just walk into situations, mark them, they explode, and I keep walking.
So,
oh, wow.
So
as we're going to get into all this, I think that this is really the depth of the conversation that's going to happen here is indicative of the fact that I still feel like, I sort of glanced across this subject at the beginning. I think that we are oftentimes quick to jump into this sort of judgmental, I want a game that's more intellectual and more superior than your game. And because of the sort of visuals that they chose to go with in this game, and because it's action combat and it's good action combat, then obviously it's not deep. It couldn't be deep because those things don't go with a deep game. I can't have a deep game that's like that.
I don't agree with you, and I think that you're framing it in the wrong context, because I'm not saying, well, it needs to be intellectual and I'm so above it. I just feel like
So you said that there's lore is great. You really like the lore.
Yeah, and it's very deep, and there's lots to do.
And the combat action is fantastic, and the story world is fantastic.
Yes, but...
But it's not nearly as good as Skyrim because it's not...
Well, I think we all like the game very much.
This is what I want to jump in here and say is, Jeff, would you say this game is fresh or rotten?
Absolutely fresh. I don't want to be misconstrued as to being down on the game in any sense. I'm saying that, yes, it's fun to play, but... It's the difference between fun to play and easily recommendable and a seminal experience like that Skyrim is. And the reason, what I'm trying to say, the reason is Skyrim feels so fleshed out, and so, there's a verisimilitude at every moment. I feel like this is here because that guy lived in that little cot and, you know, had his little life, and I stumbled upon it and discovered it. I feel like I'm discovering a world that has always existed to a certain extent, and I never have that experience with this game. And so it's just it's degrees of this incredible sort of once in a generation experience of role playing and a really fun,
and
solid game.
I would say that they're different experiences, and that trying to apples them is wherein you start to have that problem, because they're not meant to be apples to apples, although there are elements that will align.
A lot of elements.
Because they're in similar spaces. But at the same time, what if I said Skyrim's combat, Skyrim's combat is not nearly as good as the combat in Amalur.
I find that is true for me as well. It depends on the kind of character you're playing, but if you're, you know, if you're a warrior in Skyrim, you're like, okay, run forward and, you know, trigger the hell out of this thing.
I think we're getting way too bogged down in the minutiae of all of this.
But that's not minutiae. That's what you do in the game.
I agree with that. It's not merely minutiae. At the same time, in the grand scheme of things, looking at both these games, two types of players who love RPGs also like this game. You have Jeff, who was a huge proponent of Skyrim. He loved that game so much. He still likes this game. He doesn't think it's as good as Skyrim. He loves it. He wants to kiss it and buy it a house. It's a wonderful relationship.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, Garnet, I did buy a house in the game.
In the game.
Just one?
Garnet so far. Still likes Skyrim, has some problems with it, finds it to be a bit impenetrable at times, and really loves Reckoning. Would you say more than Skyrim, for sure?
I wanted to make my point. I don't want to undermine my point I still want to make.
What's your point?
My point is that you two people still love this game, or like it.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's a lot to like. There's a lot to like in it. It's very fun. For sure.
And I think nitpicking all of these, looking at the combat and saying, oh, I like this more in Reckoning and this more in Skyrim.
We certainly don't have to compare the two games, but they did come out very, very close to each other. And I think a lot of people that may
3 months apart.
Well, maybe if you finished Skyrim or have played enough of it that you're kind of done with that experience and looking for the next big RPG experience, might go here. And I think for my money, It feels slightly less than because of those tiny little things that just make it feel a little flimsier around the edges, a little less substantial.
Skyrim feels like you're actually in a world. Reckoning feels like a really well-realized ride at Disneyland.
Yeah.
You know, where you're like, everything's in its perfect place, like everything looks really good, but it has this artificiality to it.
I like both of those.
Yeah.
And,
so do I.
And the point that I was wanting to make, which to in essence – pull back a little bit, because I feel like maybe I was maybe being a little too confrontational about it, is I read this thread on, it was either Chatty or Gaff, I can't remember which one, the other day, and the thread was about maturation and as we get older and more mature, how we look at games and how has that affected the way you game. And a common thread that started to come up was this idea of wanting to feel more connected and more mature by virtue of I'm now liking artistic games, and there's something that's, you know, on a higher plane and a cooler level about this game, and so you start to try to put on airs, so to say. And look, Kingdoms of Amalur is not a game that is conducive to putting on airs. It has visuals that look like, you know, juiced up World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. It's been around. You know, it's a game that, for those of you who didn't know, it's a game that Big Huge was working on for a long time prior to getting licensed. So, you know, there's a little bit of time delay that happened as they converted it into an Anomalure game on top of that. And then the combat, which is super action heavy, is just not something. I mean, we think about serious RPGs. We think about, I'm going to think about all the ways I'm going to do my tactical combat, and I'm going to make these turn moves. And then you want to be able to say, you know, well, if I'm telling my friends, I'm going to convince them how valuable as an adult my gaming hobby is.
Why do you have to frame it that way?
Because I think that figures in here. I think that people. Not I think that me. There's. A,
but taste.
I think it figures in there.
Tastes can evolve. I mean, I look at myself and I think back to when I was playing Counter-Strike really heavily, like right out of college. I was playing it every day. You know, it was like that was the game that I played. I never really got into, you know, the latest crop of shooters. Yeah. Like, I mean, I played them, like, but I'm not an online, big online Call of Duty guy or Battlefield guy. And a lot of that is because I got a huge chunk of that sort of experience, and trying to recapture that isn't nearly as appealing to me as looking for whatever the next thing is that's going to sort of, you know, ring my bell, you know, like.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a little bit of an ad hominem attack because
really?
I think a little, it's saying, okay, well, you don't like it because.
I'm not trying to say that you don't like it because that, I think that figures into the way people will look at this game.
I think that what I'm trying to say is not because it's smarter or more refined or more mature. It just feels more realistic.
Well, it is more realistic, but that's not a good or a bad thing. That's just a different approach.
Well, it's a preference.
It's a preference. It makes the world feel more grounded to me, and I like that. When I want to – playing the video game-ness of it, of stringing together a great combo and then ending it with my cool things so that I can hit A a bunch of times to get extra XP, that's a fun thing to do as well. I'm having fun when I'm doing that. It's just I'm gaming the system now and less than I am in the other type of fighting system.
Well, I think that the fun. I mean, you brought up the combat, and to me, the combat is really the big success of Anomalure. I love that they were able to walk a line that lets me feel like a badass all the time, where it doesn't matter which way. It has skill trees, which we talked about, might and finesse,
and the character respecking is awesome.
It's so cool too.
Doesn't how punish it, you to respect your character,
and how it introduces you to all the character classes in that tutorial, so that you get to play as all the different character types, and you. We'll go, oh, I like this the most.
Really smart.
Very smart.
Really smart. And I think the balancing they did with the skill trees that was really perfect is that all of those things are additive. And by going down a path, you make yourself better at those things, but you don't preclude yourself from doing other things. So my character, who's super finesse heavy, still uses magic all the time and still fights all the time, but is just really great with a bow also. So, you know, my attack pattern might be individual bow attacks with power, or I have an AoE bow attack. I also have a lightning attack. I've got like a magic that like throws a cloud of dust and then puts a bunch of daggers into the middle of it as a follow-up attack. And I have my Fey Blades, which I can just go in and you know, bing, 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 world damage to it. So fights are a constant back and forth. And there's the argument I've read also, you know, oh, well, you can just dodge roll out of everything. Well, there's a lot of combat systems you can break. I think that if I was going back and refining this, I would add a little bit of a system where you had to, you know, mete out how much you could dodge roll, how much you could use your specials and all that. But at the same time, again, back to my original thing, part of the deal of the game is that you feel like a badass all the time.
Yeah, you do.
And you can throw a lightning spell and launch some missiles, you know, whether they be arrows or daggers or whatever else they might be, and then get right in the middle of it and mix it up in melee, and then get right back out and do something else. And the enemies they have you face force you to use different tactics as you face them.
Yeah.
So a giant may need one approach, a mob of kobolds may need something else.
Yeah, and it's super cool that there's a lot of really fun ideas that strewn about the game. You know, you can, when you craft a weapon, you can name it. How cool is that? So I have like
Bob.
Yeah, well, I have the great sword of Rad because I can, you know, and it's there's a lot of really fun stuff in the game, and it's a huge, huge experience.
Yes, it is.
So it's definitely worth the money.
So the reason I haven't written the review yet, as we wrap this thing up, the reason I haven't written the review up yet is that I, too, am like 25 hours in and have gotten, you know, sidetracked and doing a ton of other stuff. And Adam Sessler, who I saw at DICE, and I were talking about this game because he liked it a lot when he first started, and by the time he got to the end of it, he was fed up with it. And the reasoning was that there's just so much of it, and then it got repetitious to him.
Yeah, well, there's the danger of that with
it. Well, and I can imagine, you know, back when we were saying it's good in bite-sized chunks, it may work out that way that if, I mean, you can play Skyrim in a six-hour sitting and be like, oh, cool. I don't know if I could do that with Anomalure. like play. Not that I play many games for 6 hour stretches, but
I got lost in it last weekend for many long stretches.
I'm fairly certain I played it for 6 hours.
I don't know. It was the longest I played it. For a while.
I was doing my several own hours. Thing for a lot of the time.
Yeah. Well, I got lost in it pretty good.
No, I'm very much good. Like it.
I also want to say, and this is sort of in response to old Stanky Dick, because I think he threw me under the bus a little bit about L.A. Noire. I also want to say, I think that if you're talking about an experience that is 10, 20, 30 hours long, and you had an amazing fun time over half of that time, that is money well spent.
Mm-hmm. And potentially.
Potentially. And sure, it can be soured and it can reflect poorly in retrospect of the entire experience, or you can have an ending that hits a sour note and you're like, wow, I wasted my time. That's not how I felt about L.A. Noire as an example, because I didn't finish the game, but I felt like it was getting to a point where it was getting repetitious, and I had put in enough time that I felt like, well, I got my experience that I wanted out of this, and it was a unique, interesting experience that I valued. And so my end feeling about that game was that it was a really interesting, bold, unique take on this genre, and I applaud it. And yes, the experience may have lasted too long and waned a little bit in its third act, but that didn't mean I threw the baby out with the bathwater.
And I will say this about L.A. Noire, as someone who actually finished it. Even though it did drag on in a big way towards the end there, I think that it wrapped up pretty nicely.
Hmm. So maybe I should go back and finish.
Maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
Well, and the episodic nature of it, you know.
Just yeah, exactly.
Go back and do it.
Anywho.
So the Jeffs and I are all in agreement that we like Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. I'm going to stick with it because I'm having a blast with it. You're going to stick with it as well?
I was playing this morning.
Me three.
All right. So how about this? We'll revisit it again next week.
Sounds good.
And we'll see whether it's starting to get repetitious to us or not.
I also just got SSX, so I don't know how much I'll be playing.
The 60.
SSX. I see where your head is now. And we've got Syndicate incoming. And we've got Alan Wake, American Nightmares, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So don't worry. 101, 102, 103, all these upcoming shows going to be packed, as well as the GDC show that will be upcoming. But you only got to stick around to the other side of this break, and we will have more of your comments on episode 100.
This is Jave Depre, Camp Kusoge on the board, saying happy 100th, and this one goes out to you guys. Super Mega Worm. Super Mega Worm. Oh, no way. In space. Oh, no way. Super Mega Worm. And it's sort of fun to say. Super Mega Worm.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
Hi, my name is Lukáš Kořán and I'm your fan from the Czech Republic. Congratulations to your 100th episode anniversary and thank you for making the best video game podcast.
Wow. We have the most listeners from the Czech Republic to Camp Kusoge playing us out with Super Mega Room Worm Agapella.
The unplugged cover.
That was pretty tight.
That was pretty rad.
That was pretty freaking awesome. Yeah. Hey, great conversation there about role-playing games, and we were talking a little bit during the break about our takes on fantasy, and certainly one of those things is that I love the over-the-top, creative, imaginative, not creative necessarily, because there's different forms of creativity, the imaginative fantasy a la Final Fantasies, a la anything that's like crazy in the anime world, and so that kind of brought me up to this next one. What do you think your response is going to be to Ni No Kuni?
Boy, that's a hard one to... I hope I love it. I love loving things, so I hope I love it. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of it to make an informed...
We should see more of it.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're going to have a longer build-up now because it was announced that it's going to be delayed until winter of 2012, and you're nodding your head in disbelief.
I should just get it in Japanese. And
you should.
Yeah, you should.
Well,
and
I would love
report
to
on it
that
for us.
Because
yeah.
That'd be cool.
I'll consider it.
So Hino-san, who's the CEO of Level 5, gave this statement through Namco, who's doing the publishing here, that they're delaying it to 2012 in order to, quote, localize the game with the same level of quality and attention to detail that fans of Level 5 and Studio Ghibli have come to expect. Which, that sounds great.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's probably also some intelligent positioning here of, look, you just had Skyrim, now you've got Amalur, you've got Mass Effect 3, which we found out went gold just this last weekend. Yeah. Why would you bring out another RPG just to get slaughtered by that?
I mean,
and literally it would get slaughtered. So that's a good choice for them as well.
So they put it to the winter, which is totally free and clear of big release.
Who knows when in the winter? Who knows when in the winter? And those of you who are fans, you know, really diehard fans, they did also confirm that they will still have the Japanese voiceover in the North American release as well. So you're in great shape.
Awesome.
You'll be able to get both. Hopefully, though, the American, you know, the English voiceover would be great, because we just saw, what's the movie?
Secret World of Arrietty?
Yeah.
Did you guys see that?
I didn't see that.
No, I mean, we just saw it coming out. And
yeah, it's coming. But it's taken forever to come out here. And I mean, it was.
Tune into TRS next week for our review.
That's the Totally Rad Show.
Yeah.
Has Miyazaki made a bad film?
Well, he's not directing this one. He produced Studio Ghibli, but it feels a little different than his style. It's much more, I would say it's much more, I use that word again, accessible.
Because all I've seen is the trailer, and I was like, ooh, I need to see this.
It's good. Yeah, it's good.
Mm. Did you see it while I was out in Japan?
No, I didn't. It just came out.
Seems like something you would have
watched. Like a year and a half ago. More than a year and a half ago, I'd say.
Now it's got Amy Poehler. And
does it really? Well, yeah. I was actually going to make a comment about Disney's dubbing. I'm usually, even before I was fluent in Japanese, I would always want to watch anime in Japanese with English subtitles, just because I'd want to consume that form of entertainment the way it was originally made.
Yeah.
Duria!
Yeah.
But, I mean, I have seen, like, the English dubs of Spirited Away and Princess Mononoke, and they were both excellent. So...
there's hope.
Yeah, well, even if you're like a purist like that, like how I was and still am, it's probably still going to be good.
Lots of places to watch your movie, including this new little handheld device I have right here, the PlayStation Vita, which I would say that one of the things that it does very well is play video. It's a great video player.
Yeah.
Because looking at the
beautiful
hardware
screen, man. Beautiful.
You know, that's funny. So the standout element about the Vita, as we look at this thing from a hardware standpoint, is the same thing that stood out the first time we heard about it, the first time we saw it, which is this OLED screen. There's some people who had some trepidation about the reduced resolution of the screen because it's not a full 720p pixel count, but it looks fantastic. I'm not seeing any problem, you know, looking at HD video as far as seeing, you know, the pixelization or any artifacting or anything like that. It just looks fantastic when you turn it on. But I'd like to get your guys' take, though, on the PlayStation Vita as a piece of hardware. Just as a piece of, I just bought this thing and it cost me $250.
I like it a lot. I think it feels good in the hand. It's light. It doesn't feel heavy to me. The touchscreen is a nice addition. I like the fact that you pick up a device that's got twin sticks and buttons, and your natural inclination is to use those to navigate. But then I can reach over there and use the touchscreen, and it works like I would assume a phone would work, or an iPad or whatever. So you have those options, and I really like it a lot. I think I like the brushed metal look of the top and sides.
Mm-hmm.
The volume buttons are really, really nice. The index finger trigger buttons feel good. I'm a big fan. Do you have a different opinion?
Yeah, so it's interesting. My opinion on this changed somewhere around the 10 to 15 hour mark of spending time with it.
And I certainly haven't had that much time with it now.
So I think that fundamentally what's curious to me, though, that I've spent a good amount of time with it, is that they called it the PS Vita. Like, it's something different. But look at it.
Oh, it looks like a PSP is what you're saying?
It's the PSP too. And yeah. And that to me sort of...
Tomato, tomato.
Well, but there's it's deeper than that, because I think that calling it PS Vita was an understanding and acknowledgement that they wanted to and needed to and had aspirations to go beyond what the PSP was. And then when it came down to it, what they really made was an improved PSP. Because is there any reason that it should be this form factor, which, and by that I mean a oblong rectangle with rounded ends on it, other than the fact that that's what the PSP was?
Well, that's what every handheld device kind of
Game Boy Advance to
that's
the
what
DS.
Every exactly.
But there's a better ergo design. For, I mean, that my problem with it is after using it for a while, Well, I was at a playing Mutant Blobs Attack at a demo. It's a release title, and it's a platformer and stuff. And they use some rear touchscreen stuff, really basic and not used very much. But I found that in the moments where I had to be conscious of that, I was inadvertently my hands wanted to reach around and grab the back of the device and rest it on my fingers so I could play it. Mm. And
well, you can do that. It's just that deactivates the back touchscreen,
right? Well, in other words, it wasn't a huge deal to have to do that, but the fact that it was constantly popping into my mind, like I was like, oh, I'm holding this wrong, mm-hmm. or like, oh, I'm not holding this quite the way that I should. Again, I haven't spent that much time with it, but it's kind of ergonomically, it seems like they could have done something a little bit more interesting with it.
Well, you guys certainly have more hours on it than I do, so maybe.
So here's where my logic has led to as I'm into this stage of playing with this device is that it fixes things, but at the same time, it fixes the problems that PSP had rather than thinking about how do I create a great new device. So, yeah, we added two thumbsticks. The thumbsticks, though, are by virtue of the fact that it is supposed to be small and portable and something you can slide at least into a sleeve, are really short in height off the top, right? So that means the throw of them is really, really short. That makes them very twitchy. So for instance, playing Uncharted, it's very difficult to aim accurately with just the sticks. And we'll talk about Uncharted in a minute. But I, you know, it concerns me that it's going to take a while for designers to get a grip on stick tuning. I mean, if you remember, it wasn't really until the advent of Halo that we felt like, wow, right. Controller first-person shooters starting to really work on console.
Right.
And since then, now it's become accepted that, oh, yeah, you can do a shooter on a console. And I know mouse and keyboard guys out there, you're like, bullshit, it's still way better on mouse and keyboard. And I think there's a great case for that. I'm just saying that we got to a point where controllers were working and we learned how to program to them. It's going to take a while to get that here because the sticks are – I mean, they're not the nubbin that you had on the PSP, but they're not sticks. I mean, they're not of the same fidelity that you have – I mean, and I'm spoiled also because Abby Heppy got me to where I'm using stick extenders on my controllers. What?
I don't like those things.
You don't like them?
It's like they're like stilts for your thumbs.
They're great because all you have to do is move your thumb just a little bit and you get like a really nice, fine, precise movement of the sticks.
Yeah, but that would make the switch between a controller and the Vita extremely noticeable.
It is really hard. Yeah, it really does make it hard.
Whereas someone like me who doesn't use those,
coming from the shorter ones, yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
I mean, it's still noticeable. It still certainly feels a little twitchy.
They're just wobbly and twitchy. They don't really have a good centerpiece to them.
And how's their positioning? Like, they're so far apart. I mean, look, Microsoft with their controller, the thumbsticks are offset for a reason.
Yeah.
Right?
Because it fits in your hand.
Because it fits in your freaking hand. Like,
well, because what it does, it's not that it fits in your hands. It's that by not having the thumbs directly across from one another, you're not in a teeter-totter balance position. You have a little bit of offset, and it allows you to get a good, stable grip on the thing and feel like you have control over it.
Right. And Sony's just, I mean, even with the PS3, that's still a problem.
Yeah, I mean, they could evolve that. I think they could still evolve it. But the greater thinking that I got to after that is that why exactly did it need to be like this? So
what would you
thing's
prefer?
A little bit slower. I'm not at a point where I've gone through a design process on it yet to say that. But I think if I went through it, one of my questions would be like, okay, this thing doesn't fit in my pocket. Does it? Is that a reasonable? Can we agree that this doesn't
pockets,
unless you got cargo pants?
I got my Junko shorts from 1997. They're awesome. Put them in that side pocket.
Bag and Sag and Barry.
You know, that's the problem. That's the whole problem with the handheld market. Skinny jeans.
Boom.
They've ruined the handheld market.
The hipster market.
Motherfucking hipsters.
Will not buy into this.
Sony
device.
Needs to come out with a line of apparel. That's the solution.
You get a beret with a just get, like a holder in.
So my thought is, did it need to be this shape? Like once we've decided we're not going to make something I can slip in my pocket, then couldn't we have gone back and examined, okay, then what should we make? Because people have already proven, and I'm not making this comparison to draw the comparison to the two platforms. I'm just drawing this comparison to relate platforms. People have already shown that you give me an iPad, which is the size of a fucking piece of paper, and I'll make a way to carry it around with me. I'll carry it in a sleeve. I'll figure out like a little bookcase. I'll do something.
So you want it bigger?
Maybe.
But there's also a big price difference in like the Vita compared to an iPad.
$300 to $500. We're talking luxury goods. We're talking luxury goods, definitely.
I think that that's a significant difference.
But it's got a much larger screen, and it does.
Well, I think if they were the same price, what would you guys rather have?
iPad or a Vita?
If something like there was the size of something of an iPad and it had proper, you know, it had dual sticks and all these proper buttons. I don't know. I think that would be an amazing device.
I mean, if you could give me an OLED screen on my iPad, I'm all for it.
Well, and they're going to do probably Retina in iPad
3. Damn right, and I will be buying that.
And I think it's funny you would say that because my iPad 2, I look at it and I'm like, man, the screen looks great on this. And I'm not saying that.
I do not agree.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so but let's not even talk about iPad because that's not the point here. My point is that could it have been maybe like, could they have made this thing in a little bit different shape, a little more ergonomically friendly as far as where I put my sticks and all that, and had a better portable but not pocketable game experience? And I think the answer actually is yes. And I don't think it needed to be a PSP 2 with the name Vita on it.
Well, that's an interesting thought. I don't know where you're headed with this other than a larger device overall. I don't know what
it doesn't
you mean
need
by
to be
ergonomic.
A whole lot larger. I mean, I don't want it to be I don't want it to necessarily be a whole lot larger. The screen is great. Watching video on the thing is one of the highlights of this device.
And the screen is noticeably larger than any phone you're going to have in your pocket,
right,
which already makes it pop. So familiar am I with my phone interface and especially touch screen on my phone that when you handed that to me, I immediately was like, oh, wow, this feels so luxuriously large.
I agree.
In comparison, because that's the comparison
point. It's not
a
phone.
I'm not comparing it to my iPad experience.
And I agree that, and you know, look, we've had like the 8-inch Android tablets around the office, and I don't think you want to blow up into that size because once you get, you get much past this, and then you do start to get into that, well, why in the hell am I not just carrying a full-size tablet? And that's not the object. We don't want to have a full-size tablet. I get that. I'm just saying, I feel like they could have approached the design a little more progressively and wound up with something that was more 2012 than 2009's update to the PSP.
Yeah, it's not the perfect design, right?
And it's
so similar to what they've done before that you kind of naturally question, okay, well, isn't there something, another step we could have taken
here? Did you have that same complaint
with
the 3DS? Because it's the same damn issue.
Well, you know I did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I thought the 3DS, especially with the weird difference between the top screen and the bottom screen, which to me is really visually disturbing. Like, it just bugs me to look at those two screens not being the same size because they're right over under. But the fact that there's so much plastic around the 3DS.
And it looks exactly like a DS.
Yeah.
I mean, it's yeah.
So, and arguably there you had a really successful platform and you had a two-screen thing that you'd set up and you were just trying to add 3D to that. And they were never... I think that they were extending a line that had been successful, but let's not get stuck in their device.
I just don't know what...
I think they could have been more progressive with this device because this device has so much cool tech in it because it does so many things.
Other than
cool.
Moving the sticks around slightly to sort of make it a little more comfortable in the hand, I don't know what else you do. It's basically a screen with two sides that have buttons on them.
I don't think it has to be a whole lot different than that. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying is it could have been
a
little bit different with the sticks, a little bit like maybe they could have been a little bigger, a little chunkier. The buttons could have been positioned a little differently.
Or if the sides were designed so when you put your hands on them, you could actually feel where your hands were supposed to freaking go. Like,
and they have these little indentations back here.
Yeah.
There's a little couple indentations on the side of the back touch screen, but they're just not.
I didn't even know those were there when I was playing with it the other day.
I think the idea is that you'd pull your middle finger in a curl down and rest it lengthwise along that indentation.
For the folks at home, Ariel's
modeling your curled middle finger.
I mean, it does kind of naturally fit there because I kind of figured that out before you started saying that. But at the same time, would I have noticed that if I hadn't have seen those indentations?
All right, so above and beyond the sort of...
So then you get into the user experience.
Yeah.
The user experience on this device is incredibly strange.
Okay.
And so I don't know how many of you guys, if you don't listen to 8-4 podcast already with Riccardi and Mark McDonald and JJ, you guys should absolutely be listening to that because they're always up on all the stuff that's happening in Japan. They had a great episode when Vita came out. And I think it was Mark who was talking about how there are basically four ways just to go back screens in their interface because no one gave them user interface. Mm-hmm. It's guys. Come up with a user interface that is consistent throughout. In any given screen, you might press the physical PlayStation button down here in the lower left corner under the stick. Press the little arrow backwards on the touchscreen that'll appear at the bottom left corner of the touchscreen. peel back from the top right-hand corner with their peel back mechanism.
Kind of cool, though.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Which is definitely cool. Or press a traditional Windows X button at the corner of a box of a window that's open. Pick one. Just fucking pick one.
Yeah.
Maybe two. But not, you don't need four. You really don't need four. It's literally like, oh, which way do I go back from this? Oh, okay, there's no arrow down there. Oh, this must be one of the ones I hit the home button. Oh, look, this one has the peel tab. Why? It's really confusing. And then the second part, and I liked your response to the games that were on this Vita when I showed it to you.
Yeah. It gives you the little bubbles of all the games that I guess you have played on
yes.
it. And so I hit one, and then it said, oh, enter the cartridge. And I was like, oh, right. Because I'm in the paradigm of if it's an icon on my screen, I can load it up. That's where we are with downloadable stuff. And I forgot that, oh, I need a little cartridge to put in this bad boy to change games. So it feels a little weird that way.
Yeah, so it's interesting because when you open any of these applications, so the applications sit on the home screen as little cute bubble icons.
Play the music.
It's very it's very Muzak. Japanese. It's very Muzak. I feel like I'm at a
Muzak isn't Japanese.
Boom.
I wouldn't say it's very Japanese.
I feel like I should be watching a Gran Turismo video.
Well, there's a reason for that.
anyway, so it looks very much it has this appearance of a touchscreen with sets of icons like you would have on an iPhone or an Android phone or something like that. Jeff is stealing cake round two.
Do you want the whole thing?
Cake round two is happening.
I'll just put my finger in it.
Wow. Anyway.
Keep going.
What's a little bit distracting is that anytime you pick one of these icons, the system they came up with is that then opens to a second screen for that application. So you're opening an application screen that then gives them options to give you, for instance, a link back to the website for that game. So you say you open up the little Deviant screen, the middle panel will start the game. The left-hand panel will take you to the website, and then the right-hand panel takes you to the store so that you can buy game goods and that sort of stuff. So Even littler deviants. It's a clever idea. However, it's adding more steps to get to the game. You know, like
right.
That seems like it should be somehow. I think they could have written this into the specifications for Vita games more elegantly, to where when I click the game, it opens the game, and then I could have done all of those things from within the game front menu as opposed to having to open this and then open the game front menu. This also, though, illustrates, though, that every game, as part of the specifications for Vita, has a built-in digital instruction
store.
Manual. Oh. Instruction manual. So whenever you open the game, right at the top dead middle is a little question mark. When you open the question mark, it gives you the instruction manual.
That's great.
And the instruction manual is literally like PDFs of the manual you would have gotten with the game.
That's smart.
Can you open it in game?
I don't know if you can open in game.
Because that's my biggest pet peeve about these digital manuals is you can't, when you need to know what the hell
exactly.
like your little special move is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forget it. Better get some paper. Write that shit down.
And then that sort of also makes it really not so environmentally conscientious about these game boxes they're selling, because they're selling me a giant piece of blue plastic to hold a little bitty cartridge and nothing else. There's not a shard of paper in them.
Well, you know what really bothers me about these and even the PlayStation 3 packaging is that it's not the same size as other
anything else. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's another
You've
new size.
Have their own
it's another new size
like that.
Thing on my shelf. Of
I
like,
really don't
bah.
Like that.
And by the way, I'm reminded because I opened up the instruction manual here for Luminous. I'm reminded that it's another one of those ones. You're like, okay, how do I go back from the screen? Oh, that's right. There's no X. It doesn't peel down. Oh, I hit the home button. Right. I hit the home button, and then that takes me back to that screen, and then I peel that screen down to get back to the other one before it.
And
what?
Then you do the hokey pokey, turn yourself around.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Living the Vita Loca.
But there, you know, one of the things I have said that I thought was contingent or you know, a big turning point for whether or not they would be successful with this is their Nier system. And it's kind of cool. If you haven't messed with Nier before, this is their location aware. It feeds off your Wi-Fi or GPS if you buy the 3G version. To let you know who's playing what around you. You can see game ratings. You can see people can put icons next to the games that they're playing based on how much they like them. You can't put a negative icon. There's no negatives.
It's
there's
just,
there's like seven
it's
or
like
eight
Stephen
different
Colbert's like best president great president or the greatest president. I'll put you down for great.
Is there a Snoopy emoticon option?
I could pull it up here as we pull this thing up. One of the things that's funny to me is that the coolest part of Nier to me is this little target thing that shows you who's playing what nearby to you. And that doesn't pull up by default. As a matter of fact, in order to get that to pull up, you have to click through another couple of menus just to get to that. But then you see this cool target that shows you by kilometers or miles, whichever way you have it set, what people around you who have opted into the service. It is an opt-in, and you have to opt in a couple of times just to make sure that you're really into sharing that information, is playing nearby. That's kind of cool. And then you can share goods. There are things that you'll discover inside games that allow you to share goods back and forth. I think that's really fucking cool. There are bounties in Uncharted that, what?
Jeff, icing. It's delicious.
He stole some icing from the dregs of the icing that's
it's like
on the cake
cheese
pan.
On the bottom.
Oh, you mean like when someone slices the cake and then like there's like stuff left on the cake board?
Yeah.
You fingered the cake board.
Mm. I did.
It is cream cheese.
Very
frosting,
good.
So.
It's very, very good. I'd do it again. I don't care who knows it.
I think that would have been an opportune time for a heyo, but I'm trying to pull them.
You're retired?
I'm
retired from the heyo business.
I don't know. I don't want to get on people's nerves.
You are correct.
That.
Games.
So Nier is cool.
That's the most important part, right?
Well, I think that Nier ultimately could be the peak. Look, the thing is, you've got to find a way to get people to carry these things around with them.
Do you? I guess the games would be a good reason.
PSP on a chain. That'd be awesome.
That could be awesome.
PS pants.
The big...
with a pocket just the right size.
Yeah.
That's kind of awesome. I'm not going to lie. That's kind of awesome. Yeah, the games. Uncharted, obviously, is the big one. Mm-hmm. And I have played a few hours of it. It's probably the game I played the most.
Why? Does it sound like you're... hedging your opinion.
I am.
Here it comes.
I'm pretty astounded. And everyone's entitled to their own opinion. Everyone is entitled to their own opinion.
The couch.
That's Junio Gaffers.
Amazing.
Amazing.
What?
Never has there been a better preamble.
That
I'll just say there are things.
I'm not saying it sucks gigantic amounts of ass. I'm just saying.
However,
it's just a little bit.
Let's just say that my filter would find it very off that someone would find their way clear to put a 9 on this game. Mm. Very off. Huh. It's. You know, so we've talked about it a bunch amongst friends who are in the business, and I think probably the most apt description, and I wish I could attribute it properly because I just can't remember who said it, was that this feels like the direct-to-DVD version of Uncharted. Mm-hmm. And that's what it feels like content-wise. The voice acting is okay. I mean, obviously, North's in there, so Drake sounds great. There are characters who sound fantastic, and there are other characters who you're like, you know, that's just not as good as anything... That would never have made the cut into a proper PS3 Uncharted.
Who wrote it?
Not Amy.
Okay.
Not
so
E Dog.
A Dog.
So I mean, look, the next part of this then becomes the fact that a lot of Uncharted is shooting in action, and like I talk about with those sticks, it's pretty hard to draw a good bead. And this is not...
Plays like the Uncharted 3.
And everybody trolled me like that on Twitter, and that wasn't the point I was trying to make. Because I thought that Uncharted 3, actually, once you got a hang of it, was pretty playable. This to me is almost unplayable until I figured out that, you can also use motion detection to aim.
Well, can't you also do touch aiming or something?
Oh, you can do touch aiming. You can do all kinds of stupid shit.
You got four ways to close that window, huh?
Exactly. But what I found is that the way to play the game that works to me, to at least not fundamentally break it, is to play with auto aiming on, and then when you pop the left trigger or the left shoulder button, that puts you close, you know, it kind of puts you in the center of the chest of the guy, and then use the motion control to actually physically move the PSP to finish the aiming before I take the shot.
So it's like the GTA. The new GTA shooting system with the motion added onto it.
Yes,
so that actually sounds really cool to me.
It's really annoying. It's really frustrating. But especially because keep in mind, now this defeats the entire purpose of being able to use this thing on the go, because you're not gonna be sitting on the 38, you know, or any other bus and be like bouncing along and like, oh shit, now I'm bouncing all over the place and my aim's flipping all over the place. And you can't aim precisely with a stick, so you have to do, you know, you have to be sitting someplace where you're sitting down and you're doing that, and then you're like shooting and aiming and okay, that's fine. And then everything else, there's so many incorporations of the, oh look, we did something with the touchpad. There's the charcoal rubbings.
Okay. To be expected from any launch game.
Exactly.
Sure.
Look at all the features of our new whiz bang machine.
Doesn't make them good.
Right.
Well, the rear touchpad strikes me as the feature where pretty much all developers were like, oh shit, we got to do something with this rear touchpad. Like, we got the game, but I mean, everything I've seen.
The idea of charcoal rubbing sounds kind of cool. You're like, oh, I'm going to do a charcoal rubbing. That's creative. It sounds really interesting. But really all it degenerates down into is that I'm going to take my finger and rub it across the screen over and over until I see 100%.
And I'm pretty sure there's like 1,000 iOS games that have done that. Like,
and even still, there's not even the slightest shard of mechanic to it other than slide finger back and forth until you have wiped the bubbles away from the screen.
Yeah.
That's not fun. That's not cool. And everything else you can do in the game with touchscreen, you can do better with controls. You can climb ropes by moving your fingers up and down on the back of the screen.
Yeah.
But you can also just press the X button.
Yeah, it's much better.
You can trace a path across the ledges on screen to make Drake do all of the exploring, which, by the way, is the meat of the game. So now you just made the meat of the game a color by numbers.
Isn't that really the big difference between the best DS games and all other sort of gimmick motion games? The best DS games, when you use the stylus, it's because you use the stylus in a way that is additive to the experience, that you could not have accomplished this as effectively in any other way.
Yep.
You know?
And they just haven't done that yet.
Yeah,
and
it needs
this
time.
I think
the software, but maybe, isn't there yet.
But maybe that's more of a function of taking an established game franchise that was built for a certain type of game system and then retrofitting it to something.
Oh, like how do we make this this gameplay fit into the
rather than what they did with, for example, Zelda, you know, on the DS, where it's like, let's take the idea of Zelda and just completely come up with completely new ways of playing this game that are built around using a stylus.
Yeah, totally fine with that.
You know, tracing the paths and all that stuff.
All right, so I've ranted about Vita.
Yes,
we're going to take a break. Machinima's Andrea Renee is here.
She's dancing.
She's dancing.
She's dancing.
She's got jazz hands. And she's not on mic, so I can call her Andrea all day long. And she's like, oh, she's got a finger. Oh, we have finger.
It was the arm, to be precise.
We've been in the Skyrim paradigm, and now we're going into the Reckoning paradigm of the show.
Yes, indeed we are.
To use Garnet's differentiation.
So we still got some more of you great. You guys, by the way, thanks again for listening. This is the 100th episode, and it is because of you that we're here, so we have some more of your audio clips. And when we come back on the other side, at least talk about Luminous for a minute so it doesn't sound... I don't want people to think I hate the Vita, because I've been gung-ho about it. It's just there's some weird things the more time I spend with it. And Luminous is so far the...
You can talk about it in 4 seconds right now.
The shooting star of
It's Luminous. It's great. It's fun to use it with a touchscreen. Done. Right? Done.
There's some other points. Some other things I'll say. We'll do that when we come back on the other side of this.
Hey, Weekend Confirmers. Congrats on the 100th episode. Consider this message your praise and adulation. Keep rocking, keep loving to love things, and remember, you make every weekend just that much more confirmed. Here's to another 100.
Just a note to all space explorers. If there's no response from the ship, don't hand on it.
Dear
just not as dramatic reading.
The Dear Story. Dear Story.
By popular demand.
The Dear Story.
With his head and antlers between my legs, I was in some pretty serious danger. Serious danger. Serious danger.
And I told my kids, stay behind me.
Serious danger.
Put a cap in your ass, brosif. Cap.
I like that.
It's so good. And it brings the whimsy at 100%.
That's like the minimum percentage I accept for whimsy bringing. Whimsy bringing.
Cap.
Whimsy bringing.
Cap.
You are hauling us over the dots.
Dots.
They are ghosts and they're sleeping.
Dots.
Do you wake them up?
Do they tell you what
to do?
I you have to be willing to give your attention. And it, dumb.
That I need everything served up to me on a platter, and I need to have exactly what I want right now, all the time.
rant.
Press any key to skip.
There's such a culture of how far did you get? I got
the maximum
really engaging.
Just don't land on the planet.
Because it has to be the more it pulls you into the moment.
You're wrecking your spaceship. Why are you landing on the planet? You're wrecking your spaceship, Isaac.
It doesn't break the illusion of being in the game. The more it's able to get you when it gets you.
Why are you landing on the planet?
Just stay right here. Bring me a ding dong.
The bad shit won't happen.
Hey guys, this is Videosta from the Chattier from Twitter, or Frank Anderson in the real world, whichever you prefer. My favorite moment is every week waiting to see if you guys finally read one of my wonderful comments, just to get upset. Nah, I'm just kidding. Thanks for 100 great shows. Y'all have a good one. Also, we need an edit button on the chatty. Get it, stat!
Oh, he was that guy. I remember that guy. That's a good idea.
Weekend Confirmed rolls on into the second half of episode 100, and we have unleashed Andrea.
That's right. Cue the sound effects.
Oh, no.
Welcome, Andrea.
We had this planned out, and they dropped the ball.
Yes! We have to explain exactly what
Andrea came in like a tornado. A hurricane Andrea actually hit the building. Yeah.
And like a fine distilled beverage.
She's like knocking over studio equipment.
For the remainder of your weekend confirmed.
It's not even a joke. None of that's
exaggerated. Give us a jazz hands.
None of it's exaggerated.
They can't see it, but I mean, you guys can see it.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
Andrea.
Left foot, right foot, something, 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 jazz hands.
Andrea and I were feeding each other cake provocatively.
Oh, yes, you guys missed it.
It all happened.
It was dead sexy.
All this and more you missed.
Dead sexy. For reals.
Hey, Andrea, have you played with the Vita?
I have played with the Vita.
Do you like to touch the back of it?
don't.
No, I don't like to touch it. I like to tickle the back of the Vita.
Yeah? Just run your finger up and down the spine a little bit. Soft. Give it a nice little stroke.
I like a big stroke, not a little stroke.
So Jeff, what do you want to talk about?
I don't know, man. Some video
indie games?
Yeah, I guess some indie games.
There's no room for a Heyo in there, but I've decided to bring the Heyo back.
Yes.
So here's one for the road. Hey, y'all!
That's a good one.
There we go.
That's a
good one. We said, we are ready to tear into the second half of the show. But what have you played on your Vita?
My favorite thing so far, I mean, I don't have the, I'm not privileged enough to get a review copy.
You mean like you buy one?
Yes. Well, I mean, my experience playing with them has been at Vita events. And you know, they obviously are making a big push with the Vita Hill Social Club. They're having these events all over the U.S. for the big launch push. Actually, my favorite game so far is Sound Shapes.
Yeah, good one.
Which is awesome and not out yet.
Yes, it's not out yet, but the Vita's also not out yet.
It is.
Unless you have like a special thing at Best Buy.
If you pre-ordered it or bought one of the bundles, then you've got it in your hot little hand and you're playing with it. It is a weird launch, as we talked about. So wrapping up the Luminous thing. I think the cool thing is not only is it Luminous like it was on PSP, but it's like the first Luminous in that Milky did it. So my old friend James Milky, who I worked with for a long time at Ziff, did the music. He's big into electronic music. He is himself a very accomplished DJ. And the cool part about the music is that it really flows as you do the journey. Isn't that what they called it?
Yeah.
And you like start it up. And when you're doing like the single player campaign mode sort of playthrough, it really flows from track to track to track. Super nice. It's really, really well put together in that regard, which brings back that whole like sit down and lose 30 minutes to Luminous thing, which is exactly what I wanted at Luminous. Now, all that having been said, did it need to be PS Vita?
No.
You know, I mean, like when I went and saw it while I was over there for TGS, they put a ton of work into the 3D blocks and they can do some really cool stuff because now there are 3D objects and they can wrap textures around them and change them on the fly. There's some really cool visual stuff they can do there. But at the end of the day, the fun part of the game is great music synchronized really well with the puzzle part of the blocks and matching it.
And it works nice with the touchscreen.
Yeah, it works. Well, no, it doesn't work nice with the touchscreen.
I thought it did.
That brings you like sort of playing with the touchscreen?
I'm used to playing Puzzle Juice and stuff on my...
Oh, dude, Puzzle Juice is so much better.
Well, maybe I didn't play it long enough, but...
The touch response on it is really annoying. Actually, I find it way, way, way easier to do this like this, you know? So that's really all I need to really say about Luminous and Vita. And we'll just wrap up the Vita thing there because I don't want to beat it to death. I didn't actually enjoy it. I feel like we kind of got sidetracked and made it sound a little negative, which it's an interesting device. Everyone's going to start playing with it next week. We will be playing with it a lot on Weekend Confirmed. We will have much more Vita coverage. Right now, I want to talk about where we were last week, which is DICE Dice!
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
No, I said Dice. That's at Red Rocks. It's off in the hills someplace.
Whatever, it's close enough.
So you were there to see the prototype twos and the transforming things.
I was there to see those. That's correct.
Were they exciting?
I am really looking forward to what they're doing with Transformers Fall of Cybertron. Obviously, High Moon is back to do the developing for Activision. And they've actually been working on the game for a number of years now, while obviously a different team at High Moon was working on Dark of the Moon. And what they showed was really great. It's unfortunate that I can't really go into detail because the embargo isn't up until next week. But I will say that they've changed up. Like, they pretty much like took all the things that you didn't like about it and made them better and fixed it in the with the combat and the characters. Some of the characters that I wish I could tell you are in the game. It's so cool. Transformers fans are going to love this game.
Unless they're PC gamers only. Because they
unless they are PC gamers, I think you. Oh, I yeah. mean, unless they aren't PC gamers. I mean,
no, because High Moon came out and said that they can't. No PC. They don't know how to develop for the PC. Essentially,
yeah.
No
PC. That shit happens.
They've never seen a PC. It's
crazy.
Before.
Well, the last game was.
They're sophisticated. Yeah, so they're from the past. No one uses them anymore anyway.
I see.
They're anachronisms.
But Prototype 2, actually, I That's have seen a number of times. They've
That was an anachronism. It wasn't an anachronism. Anachronism is a different literary device. Sorry.
So back to games.
Sorry. just look it up and you'll see how that was.
Google it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Unless
you're jogging, then
that'd
be difficult. So
because I just pointed out.
So what else was that Dice?
I was on the literary criticism team.
So Prototype 2 was the other thing that we saw there. They had a big preview event. This was probably this was the first time I got hands-on. I've seen the game a number of times at different events. And I didn't play the first one, but I've really enjoyed the time I spent playing with the second one. I was skeptical. I went in and I was like, I don't know about the story. It's like this whole infected thing that we've seen before, but it's a little bit different. I mean, you have this kind of interesting dynamic between, you know, James Heller, who's the new character, the new protagonist that they've introduced for Prototype 2, who is trying to hunt down Alex Mercer, who was the protagonist from the original Prototype, who infected Heller, and it kind of went across, you know, New York Zero, this kind of ground zero type scenario, killing people.
New York Zero.
NYZ, yes. And
like Coke Zero.
I can't tell. It's so much fun. Like the
it's New
power,
York without all the calories.
That's right.
Yes, exactly. It's tasty and delicious and full of blood and tendrils and weird, crazy biotic powers. And you feel really powerful as this character. You can fly, you can run up the sides of buildings, you can do these crazy ground moves, and it's just lots of mayhem.
I think Radical did a good job with Prototype. I don't think we should overstate. I think they did a good job with it.
I don't.
You don't think it was good?
No.
I don't think it was great, but
think it was good.
Really?
Yeah. It's one of my least favorite games that year.
I think it did something.
That's fair.
Well, it came out right alongside Infamous, right?
The original. It did, yeah.
And Infamous was a much better title overall. But it did do some stuff that I thought.
I liked the flying squirrel bit.
I didn't.
I liked some of the combat, but there were definitely problems in it. I am substantially concerned for Prototype 2 because I definitely think that. Yeah. I mean, they're building off the same engine apparently, and it just looks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, but we remain to be seen. I haven't played it. I didn't go to the event.
Like,
I didn't check it out.
Venom, the game.
Yeah,
like the old Spider-Man.
They've
villain.
Changed
the
a lot
called,
of
like,
things
final
about
version?
The game. I mean, literally, they've almost completely overhauled the combat mechanics, and they literally have changed like almost everything from the first game to the second game. Is pretty much what the developers said.
Well, Andrew Yoon looked at it for us, and you can check out his preview on Shack News. And I think he was more in Andrea's camp than I am. I liked Prototype 1, but I am a little cautious about Prototype 2. We'll have more, of course, to look at that as it keeps coming, and look for Andrea's preview on.
Oh, my preview is already. I didn't do like a full.
No, you just checked it out.
Preview.
You were just there to have.
I have a piece
check it
that's
out.
Up now on Clever Games because I did that while I was still working with Clever,
gotcha.
And that's available now. If you guys go to Clever Games YouTube page, you can watch that. It's pretty much me at this event with all these like zombie infected people, and we show the cool digital exclusive from Dark Horse, the comic for Prototype 2, which is really awesome, and then they also had hands-on time.
Jeff's grimacing. He really didn't like Prototype. You really didn't like Prototype
at all.
That's
what did you dislike about it?
Boy, I thought that. How long do you have?
His face is so condense grim it. Right now.
I mean, his face is really grim.
No, I don't mean to be grim.
Okay, now there's a smile there.
I don't need to crap on the game. I just they really disliked it intensely. I felt like it was tons of weird AI garbage that the enemies behaving in strange ways that
you didn't like the takeover mechanic.
I mean, I thought that was a kind of an interesting idea. Kind of I didn't think the implementation was particularly compelling. I found the combat to be really floaty and odd and
spikes
and have weight, and it just
environment traversing the environment though was pretty fun.
Yeah, except that I never felt like my character had really existed in that world. Really had weight when he was like running up the side of the wall and everything. Yeah. It just felt like I was floating. And yep. I think I remember like I could just get into some kind of weird like air kick and just float from guy to guy and smack.
Yes,
it was really stupid.
So I would say that all those things were sort of. I'm more with Jeff Mattis on this, but I would say that was in a pre-Batman Rocksteady era.
I equate
and
like
post-Batman Rocksteady.
Yeah, totally.
The bar has been completely raised for that sort of open
absolutely.
World and also free flow combat.
And you're right about
it's outclassed.
It was outclassed at the time.
So I did not go across Vegas. I stayed out at Red Rocks to do Dice. And there was some interesting stuff. I'm going to condense it down. I just wanted to share a couple of things that I really liked out of Dice. I don't know if you guys kept up with it at all. Tim Sweeney gave a really, really, really good talk. And Tim Sweeney, of course, of Epic Games. He's incredibly, incredibly smart guy. He usually gives talks at very technical-oriented conferences. So this was him coming and talking to a much broader audience at Dice. And he so completely debunked. And someone asked me how much I thought this out there. Have you guys at least heard bouncing around people saying, "Oh, could the next generation be the last generation of consoles?"
No, I haven't heard that. Is that actually going around?
I've heard that, but not from any sources that I would be like, "Oh shit!"
Like, because the world's ending.
And how would they know that for like right now?
Because we had gotten to the Xbox 360. And PS3 era being HD and displays being at an HD level, which is probably not going to change for the reasonable future because every time you upgrade
4K.
Why don't we
want 4K? Why don't we want these badass like crazy things that were shown at CES?
Because it's outrageously expensive.
Because now, and because HD back in the
look at how hard it was to pull people from SDTV to HDTV, and you still have a lot of people with SDTVs. And so now that you're in a 1080p world, it's going to be a long time before we move forward from the next thing after 1080p.
Where's my holodeck?
Yeah, give me that.
So because of that, there's been some speculation that based on the power of the 360 and PS3, that another generation past that would be at a relatively high enough level versus where display tech was that you wouldn't really have much benefit to go beyond that.
It might be a while coming, but I don't think that it's going to be the last console.
That seems ridiculous.
It seems to me like we have a long way to go between what we have now and, you know, you look at the new trailer for like Far Cry 3 or, you know, Dead Island or, you know, those CGI awesome looking. I mean, you know, we're a ways away from that.
So
a
you guys haven't heard, I guess I'm alone on my island where I had heard a number of people talking about, look,
seems
we don't.
Bizarre to me to say.
And how long?
Moore's Law ain't ending anytime soon.
About 200 years, according to Sweeney. He did the math.
Really?
Yes.
200
years? So,
200 so why are we even bothering talking about it? None of us schmucks are going to be around in 200 years.
Pretty awesome the way he did this talk. So he debunked this whole idea that we were even close by starting off on a very technical side, which I thought was really, I mean, that's what you expect from him, right? He knows technology. He started off talking about medical studies that have looked at the actual physical characteristics of the eye and equated them to a digital analog of, look, your eye is basically like a 30 megapixel camera in its fidelity, and it can read changes in frames per second up to about 72 frames per second. Anything past that, it can't really discern that it's going any faster. And so then he looked at what that would take resolution wise. And I need to pull up my, if you want the actual numbers. Have it on my iPad.
No, that's okay.
He's
we're good.
Numbers on the iPad.
You want the numbers?
No, do you get into jargony?
It's kind of amazing. Well, if you don't want the numbers, that's fine. But I thought it was pretty amazing. Basically, what he was saying is that in just the next few jumps of generations, we will have thousands fold more processing power than what we have right now, and what we could do with that is really staggering. Is really, really staggering.
Well, you get beyond that graphical fidelity that you were talking about, where you cap out at 72 frames a second stuff, and then you've got like, you know, processing power that you can dedicate entirely to AI.
Right. And which is exciting.
Great physics and stuff like that. It's
give me a city where every single individual in that city has its own.
Yeah. So, you know, so basically, give me that. Doors wide open to that. It was really, really cool technology side. And then what I thought he did that was really insightful and something I wasn't expecting was he brought in the sociology angle of it, which was he talked about how until we see the fruits of the next generation that has grown up with smartphones in their pockets all the time and instantly accessible internet that's everywhere in high bandwidth, that they think in a different sort of imaginative world than someone who didn't grow up with that. Someone who grew up with television has one sort of set of imagination, and that once we move forward with people who are accustomed to that, they will be able to even imagine uses for these technologies that we just aren't trained and raised to understand yet.
Holodeck.
That's why we have to kill the children. Kill them all. They will one day destroy us.
It will be awesome.
It's self-defense.
They are going to come up with the most amazing shit, and I can't wait to see it.
Get off my lawn. That's what I say.
Don't be a curmudgeon.
Jeff's in the mass genocide camp.
We're not going to have any teeth.
Stop the children. There's only enough room on the planet.
Stop
those
the children
at
all
costs.
They're going
to find the fountain of youth, and then we'll all be young again, and then you'll want those young people with their fancy inventions.
You are such a curmudgeon, Jeff.
I love hating things.
You love hating things, yes.
I'm just kidding.
Anyway, it was a really, really cool talk. It was very inspirational. It was very exciting. And, you know, it was very cool because he wraps up with, hey, the brightest future for games lies ahead. And that's a really great message to hear right now, especially people get frustrated. There's, you know, pressures from from apps, from 99-cent applications, from iPhone, from expensive publishing costs, to have this guy who has, you know, been dedicated to building technology for so long say, look, there is still so much for us to do. It's fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. And really backing it up with tons of concrete evidence was really cool. That was really cool. The other talk that I actually got a big kick out of was Mike Capps, also from Epic, Ted Price from Insomniac, and Frank Pierce from Blizzard talking about how they've stayed viable in the business for so long. And a lot of their talk centered on things that they do institutionally to keep the staff happy, things that they do to keep morale going and all of that. And I asked a question of them because it had gotten a little bit off into business management. It's DICE, right? I asked them what I was curious about, which was how do you keep, you know, all three of these companies have big Uber franchises, which they go back to with sequels, which has got to be really tough to get the, you know, creative juices going in. At the same time, they also go and do new stuff. And I asked them, how do you approach that with your team? How do you keep those creative energies going? And I thought their answers really were well reflected as the foundation of their games. For instance, Mike Capps, Epic, said that, well, for them, they always want to be top dogs. They've got a lot of personal and company pride invested in being badasses and being the badasses and really being, you know,
badasses
and then putting out the Unreals and the Gears of War.
Yeah.
And so they want to follow up on
define
that.
Define the top of the line.
Define the top of the line. Yeah. And within the game, they feel like they've moved up to this point where they have so many players who are, you know, mid-world players. They're not super avid gamers. You know, Gears of War might be a game that one of four or five games they play a year, that when they come back to Gears of War, they want to see their friends. Mm-hmm. They want to feel like they're hanging out with their friends again and have that bro moment, you know? So that obviously that makes a lot of sense with when you think about where Gears is. Whereas Frank Pierce said, you know what, they come to their games and they really feel a tremendous amount of pressure because they have this tradition, they have this avid fan base, and they always feel this pressure of, wow, we've got to get StarCraft right. We've got to get Diablo right. We've got to get Warcraft right. And that really weighs on them, and that then really piles up, and it's one of the reasons that they get into these protracted design schedules is because they're feeling all of this pressure to be true to those franchises, and at the same time, they know they have to innovate. They know they still have to make StarCraft II, StarCraft II. But they're feeling that pressure of being authentic to it. And then Ted was the most interesting of them because, I mean, the other two obviously have this big franchise, but he talked about how the way they keep the creative vibe going at Insom is that when they're doing a game project, the team that's going to work on it, when they finally decide they're going to work on it, has to own it. They've got to love it. They've got to be behind it. They've got to really feel the creative vibe to it. And as long as they have that piece, then they'll move forward with it. And that really rang to me, especially around Resistance 3, which was...
How do they quantify that, though?
Well, you know, I think wonder. I think that's one of those cases where you have to have a team that you've worked together with for a long time, and you just have a feel for it, right? Mm-hmm. It's like guys aren't going to shit you. I mean, and they're going to tell you. I mean, you're going to talk about a 24, 36 month design, you know, commitment of your life.
Well, and you can tell the difference between, you know, titles that those developers evangelize and the titles that they're just sort of like, okay, here's the next iteration, here's the next chapter, whatever.
So I thought that was really cool because you look at like Resistance 3, which was a departure for the Resistance series. And then you hear him talk about how the team had to own it and really feel the creative side of it. And you think, oh, well, you know, I guess that was what they really felt strongly about doing. Hmm. So that's pretty cool.
It is cool. That's a great conference.
Yeah, it is really. It's really good to see those sorts of insights. And I don't know. I mean, is that interesting to you guys?
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, as someone who works in making games, I would say so.
Yeah, the rest of the morale stuff. I mean, it was interesting. I suppose if you worked in a studio, stuff about, you know, how do you keep your good talent in place, which obviously is a great big challenge because, you know, you work on one of these great big titles and suddenly you're very desirable to a number of studios.
Well, the turnover in this industry is just ridiculous.
Well, I think that that's a problem that's widespread in all industries. Mm-hmm. How do you keep your talent? How do you keep company morale up? I mean, we see that a lot just in the media industry that we work in online media. Like, it's a tough business to be in. And also the turnover is high in online media as well.
A lot of people are also contract in the games industry, which, I mean, get done with the project and you're gone. And you have to move on someplace else.
Because of the cyclical nature of the production schedule.
Yeah, it's a lot of mercenaries for hire sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily want to be mercenaries. It's just the way it works
out. Right,
Right, so the other big element, of course, of the DICE conference is the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences Awards. I don't think it came as a big surprise that the peers of the industry selected Skyrim as Game of the Year. Did you guys find, I mean, was there any expectation it would be something else?
No, definitely not.
Well, if you look at how many hours played and, you know, how big that the reach of that game was, you know, it's not a completely unreasonable.
Especially when you look at the voting membership of AIAS, which is all the peers in the game industry. Obviously, there's a lot of professional love amongst one another for, wow, that was a pretty hell of accomplishment.
Well, and they didn't have to get there with expansions or DLC or pre-order incentives. Everybody that bought Skyrim, no matter if you bought it 2 months, pre-ordered it 2 months in advance, or bought it 2 months after release, you got the same game. You didn't get like special armor sets or special upgrades. And that's the thing that I really think that, you know, Bethesda should be, you know, pat on the back for, because that's a growing problem that we've talked about on this show a number of times, is how does the gamer decide who they buy the game from? Which pre-order incentive do they want? Which DLC do they want?
Are you going to buy your Razer-branded Mass Effect 3 controller so you can get the unlockable extra gun with the extra unlock power if you buy the Razer controller?
I'm sorry, I fell asleep right there. What were
you saying? Oh my gosh, really? I didn't even hear about that. That's so sad.
Yeah.
Oh,
you can
man.
Also buy the iPhone case, which is the Mass Effect 3 iPhone case, which will unlock a different gun in Mass Effect 3.
That's
and if you already unlocked the game from one of their other pre-orders, then it'll power it up even further.
I'm so disappointed. And obviously, your you know, listeners know that I'm a huge Mass Effect fan. It's so sad to me that one of my most favorite franchises ever is
just a whore.
Whore. Literally, they are. They're whoring themselves out. And like to offer things like, I mean, it's one thing if you
Liara says hi.
It's one thing if you offer a costume or like a cosmetic upgrade, but to offer like a weapon, a piece of your inventory that you can't get any other way, to me is just, I mean, I'm sure they're going to make them available for purchase in like a pack at some point, but I don't know. I'm really disappointed that they went to the lengths that they did to really, I mean, from the figurines to the art book to, like you said, the controller, the Facebook app, the iOS game that's coming out. It's too much.
I do sort of expect Mel Brooks to walk out at any moment.
I mean, even Activision with Call of Duty did not do this. No, you know what I mean? It's
but
ridiculous.
You look at George Lucas, right? And that his cash cow was all about, I mean, you can get fucking Star Wars toilet paper if you want.
Yeah, but it doesn't unlock something in the game for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because George has been wiping his ass with Star Wars for years.
That's more fan service than anything.
I'm sorry, I had to get that one in for you.
No, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did. But nice. I think that's more like people who have loved that property for 20, 30 years. You know what I mean? They want to get that in their life however they can. And it, I agree, it's a little asinine that they're going to such lengths.
Sure.
But, I mean, for BioWare and EA to say you get a special boost in the game if you buy XYZ product, I think it's...
Here's the thing. Yeah. We don't know if it really that's matters, though. Is it actually a boost or is it...
That's the thing. We don't know because they're being very vague about what these things actually are.
Well, the bells that are rung for me is that second kicker of if you already got this bonus weapon from another promotion, then getting this second promotion will stack and make it more powerful. I mean, at some point in time, they have to be like not even worrying about balance and be like, fuck it. You know, this guy bought the iPhone 4S case and he bought the Mamba mouse and he also bought the Mass Effect 3 toilet paper. He is now a badass. They're ridiculous.
I don't know how we started talking about Skyrim as Game of the Year and ended up on Mass Effect 3. I think it was Andrea.
No, it was not. It was Garnet.
No, it was Andrea because she
no,
was.
It wasn't.
Well, you started talking about how they didn't fall into any of those sales.
I didn't mention Mass Effect though. I was talking about DLC and pre-orders in general. Many games supplement their game, which I like. There's this whole kind of stigma, right? Oh, you're taking something out of the game, which you should leave in the game just so you can charge me for it later. And Skyrim didn't do that. Skyrim was like, you get it all for that $60 price point.
And the
patches.
We're
not going to make you. We're not going to charge you extra in a month down the road. We're not going to say, give us $15 and you can get two maps. You know what I mean?
Well, the DLC just hasn't come out yet.
Well, no, there will be DLC, but what I'm saying is it's a complete standalone experience by itself the way it is. The DLC is just kind of icing on the cake, if you will. The Celebration 100 episode cake.
Although, in fairness, I kind of look at DLC for something like Mass Effect the same way. Like, weapons and more cosmetic stuff is, whatever, a nice bell and whistle. If they're locking maps and missions and stuff behind that, that's where I start to get a little upset.
They are for the multiplayer. They're doing power upgrades with all of these things for the multiplayer, which to me is
so
just
tying
not
a little
right.
bow around these AI AS awards. I think the piece that we sort of lost there is also it's not really sales oriented. Keep in mind, this is voting on by the peers in the industry, by your game makers. So I think there was a tremendous amount of outpouring of love for how much work went into crafting that world that we all have agreed about that. What a fantastic world Skyrim is. So there's a couple other I want to call attention to before we hop out of this segment. Modern Warfare 3 took home Action Game of the Year. That's one of the first times that we've seen a big award go to Modern Warfare 3, which, by the way, was the heavy-hitting sales king of last year.
Of ever.
And so, I think that's interesting that there was that is an acknowledgement within the industry of, hey, yeah, you guys did make one hell of an action game there. It was a pretty
Batman won adventure game because
Batman's
those aren't
game.
The same. Because it wasn't an action game, God knows.
Yeah, right.
Well, I understand the difference. I really thought Call of Duty's Modern Warfare 3's campaign was. It was like a nonstop action thrill ride. It's like
definitely
there
was no adventure involved.
Well, it wasn't adventuring because like in Batman, you got to choose where you got to go. It was kind of more of a sense of like, what's around this corner? What does this building hold? Like,
what was around each corner, though?
Action. Yeah, okay, all right, okay. In all fairness,
it's just arbitrary.
We need some semantic readjustment
in the
industry.
It's just a little arbitrary. Okay. It's like,
I think that's true.
I love the fact that Bastion won.
I'd say a couple of winners that were well deserved. Great to see Supergiant take home the hardware with Bastion for downloadable game. I was also really glad to see FIFA 12 get recognized because that was an amazing game and it's so hard for sports games to recognize. Granted, they had a sports category here, but FIFA 12 was a high point of gaming last year, sports or otherwise, a fantastically put together game. Interesting that Orcs Must Die took home the strategy title.
That is pretty amazing.
It's really good, though.
It's great.
Yeah, it's really good.
I mean, I'm not arguing that it's great. But
love that it got that award.
It's up against Shogun 2 and some other heavy hitters in that space. And then, here comes this game from Robot Entertainment, the X-Ensemble guys, who, by the way, also are the guys who make Hero Academy. Mm-hmm. I'm into the Hero Academy.
And it's a fairly new. There have been other, things that are similar, but it's really pretty unique in terms of what it does. So
absolutely. And everyone's favorite Wheatley taking home the outstanding character.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Yay.
I'm so glad.
Yeah, so
can't
so
argue
much
with that.
Cannot disagree with that. Okay, can't disagree with episode 100. We have one more block to wrap up this big show for you. Stick around. We have a little bit more from you guys who have made this show possible here with a little audience audio clip.
This is Ben Lewis, community manager at Hellfire Games, and my favorite Weekend Confirmed moment was from episode 73, where my good friend and former coworker, Shane Bettenhausen, was explaining how El Shaddai was based on this obscure ancient Jewish religious text that was loosely related to the Dead Sea Scrolls, but sort of told through a very Japanese lens. And then Jeff Kanata says this.
Sounds like this game was put together by a marketing team.
I was driving when I listened to this, and I laughed so hard that I nearly swerved into oncoming traffic. So, hey, happy 100th episode, Weekend Confirmed, and thanks for almost getting me killed.
Woman.
Whoa,
making me horny.
Woman.
Woman. Saturday mornings.
Girls in cartoons will leave me in ruins. Girls in cartoons. Girls in cartoons.
Did you say?
Does not compute. Does not compute. Does not compute.
Why was I programmed to lie?
Choices.
Choices.
Did you say?
Would you want to hang out with this guy?
Later. These are fun party songs. Fun party songs. He was doing the panda roll.
Panda roll.
Panda roll.
Panding.
Later.
Panding.
Later.
I think it's brilliant.
Later. I think it's brilliant.
Later. I think it's brilliant.
I think it's brilliant.
Why are you such a hater? Why are you such a hater? Why are you such a hater? Why are you
killed me. Raped my dead corpse.
I'm in it to win it.
Yeah.
Get to the skeletons. Skeletons, fuck you. I got fire now. I'm a pyro motherfucking mancer.
I'm in
second
it
skeleton comes up. Boom, fire. I'm a pyro motherfucking mancer. I'm in it to win it.
I must have Aspergamers.
Open your game flap.
Flap.
Yeah, you want to put a game in your app.
Game flap.
Master marketer.
Open your game flap.
And stick a game in it. A game in it.
Put in your game flap.
And stick a game in it.
Super mega worm.
It is sort of
super mega worm.
Fun to say.
Super mega worm.
Super mega worm. It's just unique. There's women pushing babies, and like people will get scared and run, and they'll say things like, I just bought a new car.
Super mega worm.
Super mega worm doesn't care about your car.
Super mega worm.
Take my wife instead.
Super mega worm.
Care about your baby?
Super mega worm.
What?
It's gonna leave, bro, with all you need to know, cause it's his damn show. It's so good.
Hey, Weekend Confirmed, happy 100.
And to that we drink.
I know. Wow, that was quite the lead, wasn't it? It's like super mega worm, my damn show, and a greeting from the listeners. Awesome job. Thank you very much for everybody who took the time to record us a little message.
Very cool.
We super appreciate you listening. And we're going to wrap up episode 100 with all of your stuff, although Jeff would like to lead it off with a little philosophical music.
I wanted to throw this at you guys because I read something this week that blew my mind, and I retweeted it. Maybe you saw. I don't know. So we talk a lot about copy protection and pirating and all that stuff in the video game space. So this is only kind of tangentially related, and we can talk about it as much as it interests you guys. But it blew my mind in the sense that I'm sure you guys are all aware of those 3D printers
that are becoming
more affordable. They basically allow you to print things out with plastic.
Like World of Warcraft did a thing where there was a company that let you print out your avatar, and it was like a little miniature version.
Mod Nation,
MakerBot is one of them. I've been doing some reading about them lately because of this article that I read, and it's really difficult for people to predict the future. You know, science fiction, it's famous for the notion that
it gives birth to anachronisms.
It does indeed. Well, it's always really difficult to know where we're,
Sorry, I educated Garnet.
So 10 years ago, 15 years ago, mm-hmm. we didn't worry about music, maybe longer than 10, 15 years ago. But there was a point when we were all kids when, you go into a store and you would buy music, and that's how you got music. And now music is almost purely digital for a whole generation, and it's distributed in a whole different way. And that's kind of what's happening with video games and all kinds of information. But what happens when we get to the point when physical objects will be in the same way? When I can print out a physical object, when these three-dimensional printers get to the point where they're so inexpensive and so sophisticated that there isn't really anything that I need to go to a store and buy that I can't just replicate at my home purely...
I think you just said the word, replicators.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's basically a Star Trek concept.
But
right?
And this is a problem. How?
Well, what does it do to global economy? Well,
it destroys it. Somebody will still... how many people you're putting out of work.
Because the article that I read was that basically there will be the equivalent of Pirate's Bay for physical objects. Ooh. So that you will just be able to download the schematics of something.
Well, yeah.
And it will be pirated like crazy.
But it'll be like software is right now, right? Somebody will be selling those schematics legitimately to people, and then it'll be about how do you police that.
Right.
You know.
So they were talking – so this what this article was talking about was that there will be copy protection embedded in these kind of things, which will make your device embed flaws in the objects that you're trying to create, and that they will try to – that will be one of the ways they're predicting will be trying to get around you being able to do
this.
So you're like
printing out
the Eiffel Tower and you end up with a big cock instead.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's awesome. But,
nice. Hey,
there we go.
Nice.
But maybe we're in the wrong state of mind to talk about this, but I would love to know.
Wait, do we have more booze?
How you guys feel about the concept of going having the equivalent of what happened and is happening in video games and has happened in music and in movies and TV happening to physical objects? If we can imagine, and I think it'll happen in our lifetime. It's not going to happen in 5 years. It's probably not going to happen in 10 to 15 years. But 30, 40 years from now, there's going to be a level of sophistication, and it's going to be so inexpensive for you to create. You don't have to go to IKEA. You don't even have to go to get a watch. You know, there will be very sophisticated
kinds of things that you can make.
That
there's all kinds of changes coming in society over the next 100 to 200 years. And that's part of it that, you know, the also rapidly approaching one is how much of our lives we live out in the internet space. Mm-hmm. We talked about generational changes. Imagine two generations from now, how connected our kids' kids will be. Imagine simply what degree of multimedia, internet, always active computer interfaces they will have running all the time.
In their brain.
In their – possibly. And how valuable – okay, so there's an argument. Let me ask you, why do I even need a 3D printer? Because they'll be more worried about virtual goods. They will be more worried about things that happen in the virtual
space. It's possible.
And as a matter of fact, already virtual goods have become a major economy in the current economy. And here's a reason why. Because if I'm a middle-class person, I can afford – fantastic things of a incredible degree of sophistication in a virtual world that I'll probably never be able to earn the money to order the analog of in the physical world. Like I'm never going to own a, you know, 12 bedroom, 10,000 square foot house in Malibu.
But
in the virtual world, I can.
Doesn't that directly fly in the face of what you brought up in the previous segment of there being the next console is the last console? If the virtual space becomes more desirable to be in than the physical world, then the most important thing to have is a portal into the virtual space, and that's really where innovation will live.
Then
having that increase in sophistication and getting better and better versions.
There's a lot of fits and throws that development in the next couple hundred years has to go through. I mean, we are going to increasingly look. We call part of America the Rust Belt for a reason. We're not going to continue to be an industrial society, a global industrial society for the next 200 years. Even third world countries now are where America and Western Europe and Japan were in the 50s and 60s. So what's going to happen is we're going to all keep pushing forward. Even those third world countries keep pushing forward. And eventually the landscape of what the economy is going to change. We're not going to be goods driven. We're not going to be goods driven, which means we're not going to be ads driven. And who knows how the hell it's all going to work out.
You know what I'm waiting
for? How did we get here? Why? I'm confused as to how we arrived at this conversation.
And then we'll form the Federation with the base in San Francisco. It'll be tremendous.
Insta food. I want insta
food.
Well,
I mean, that's the real problem.
Yeah, like
the
donut problem. Machine.
Chicken good.
Chicken
good. I don't want insta.
All right, clearly the ladies are not interested in talking about this.
Right. I think it's awesome. I am.
I mean, I personally think that you know, it's going to be, we'll see 3D printing technology become more affordable and people have it in their house, but it's going to be a long time before, or if ever, we see people having a garage-sized printer in their house that allows them to make furniture and shit.
Right.
I don't understand the concept of having a machine that instantly makes something. I just...
Well, we're already seeing in the board game space, we're already seeing print and play board game pieces being distributed by people who don't have the funds to actually make them. And it's very, at this point, the, you know, the DPI of these kind of three-dimensional objects is very low, and there's a quality difference. But that's all going to change, and it's all going to get cheaper and easier and of higher quality. And I think that there will be a point at which very sophisticated things that you would pay a premium for someone else to make for you, you won't have to do that anymore.
I think that's probably
my counter argument is that that's a laser disc. Is that that's solving a problem in a physical world when what's going to happen is the thing that be important in physical world will be just the handcrafted items, because all the other stuff we will be so quickly moving into the virtual world that being able to print me a cheap plastic copy of it is not going to matter for shit.
Well, but do you think here's maybe where I think this can feed into a video game type discussion is
we need Stephen Fry here.
And maybe this is all too heady for everybody, but the is there a philosophical difference in your head, or do you think there will be one in the heads of other people of quote unquote pirating a physical object to pirating information? Because I think there's a cognitive dissonance that you can get into that says it's the music isn't anything. It isn't anything. It's I'm not walking
because
in
it's
and stealing
thing.
Something.
It's ethereal thing.
It's the difference
like,
between
it's
intellectual property and physical property. I really just think there's too many things in our physical world that need to be put together by hand or even by machine to be replicated at home. I mean, I can't imagine the kind of like inventory pack you would have to stick into the machine in order for it to like create something for you automatically. I personally don't see that as being something that's realistic in the next 30 to 40 years.
It's only going to print solid things. So one of the
not moving parts.
So one of the applications we've seen of this thing already that's cool. Well,
I'm
by
saying,
its current nature, it does not have the capability to assemble multiple pieces.
But I understand the difference between like a baseball glove and a short film. You know what I mean? Like anybody can make a baseball glove, right? Like it doesn't take a rocket scientist. If you have the pattern for the stitching, anybody can do it. But to make a short film requires a higher sense of intelligence, creativity, kind of this.
It doesn't need to be a good short film. It can be a bad short film.
Well, that's subjective. I'm talking about a baseball.
Why do you hate ball glove makers?
I don't. I'm just saying that you know what? It's a physical thing that you can get a blueprint for to make.
Right, but that's the kind of comparison I'm trying to make is that I could write the code for Gears of War if I knew the schematic, the equivalent of the schematic.
But you couldn't get the scene between Dom and Marcus just perfect. Now,
clearly,
could you?
We can't have this discussion. Moving on.
I like this discussion.
I can talk about Darkness 2 if you want.
I was interested.
Ooh,
I was there with you.
Darkness 2 is great.
I was with you.
Thank you.
I was with you. I think that again, my argument is that it's almost moot because that middle ground. That ground of like where I would take the plastic version of something else is moving into the virtual space so fucking fast that piece is not going to matter.
What I'm trying to say is that the ownership
About the right side.
Well, in a society in which that is the norm, the ownership falls to the designer.
So here's
the
thing.
Same way that the ownership of information or like DRM property law says that the ownership of an intellectual property is owned by the designer of that property.
The 3D printer version will always be the 3D printer version. I can go right now and get an ultra high resolution picture of the Mona Lisa, and I can print it on a fantastically sophisticated color printer,
right,
and get a nice result, but I don't have the Mona Lisa.
It's interesting.
I can get a lossless version of Hey Jude by the Beatles, and it's Hey Jude by the Beatles. It is Hey Jude by the Beatles. Lossless version. It is song.
Okay. So you're saying that therein lies the most important difference. But what about things that are very valuable like a Rolex, where there's no artistry involved per se?
There's definitely no individual artistry involved in Rolex.
It's a purely one-to-one mechanical artistry.
Jewelry
there
is
an amazing amount of skill that goes into assembling an automatic movement watch.
Yes.
Okay. Have you looked inside one of these? Like, they're crazy.
Well, maybe that was a poor example, but do you understand what I was getting at? In the sense,
did you watch Hugo?
He did.
I cried. I loved Hugo.
No, but
what I'm trying to get to is that there will be things that aren't like art. There aren't like painting.
I agree. No, I hear what you're saying. There are things that you could do with that.
Right. I mean, I'm sure the audience is like, screw Jeff. Let's stop talking about
this. No.
I mean,
and someone who's a little bit handy could use this, because one of the applications we are seeing increasingly with this is it's used in a lot of prototyping labs, because you can very quickly build parts with the 3D printer and use it to assemble prototypes. So imagine that then those parts are now a little more sophisticated, a little more attractive. People could really start building themselves really cool, you know, quick assembly things. But it's still just a printed copy.
Yeah, but there will be a point that was what people would say about recording something off the radio.
Yeah.
Well, it's still just a cassette copy of the radio. And now we're at the point where it's 1-to-1. It's exactly digital, lossless, flat.
That's what IKEA is. It's copies of the same thing.
Right. And you won't. That's exactly my point, is that you don't have to. You will not have to go to. There will be no point for an IKEA, just like there's no point for a Tower Records.
Wait.
You'll have IKEA. IKEA, instead of selling you the physical crappy table that you bought, they're going to sell you the blueprint for the table.
Right. And it would just be all about the design, not the physical implementation. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I want the blueprint for the Swedish meatballs. Have you had
Yes. Oh, my God. They're so good.
Seriously.
Meatball good.
I think I just did a poor job of presenting that, and I apologize to everyone, and good night.
414 threw us this one. Here's a classic for the 100th. 414 says, hey, Garnet Del Rio, you guys should do a little historical perspective on Weekend Confirmed. I am really interested on, like, how you guys got together to do the podcast. How did Jeff get picked to be the co-host of Weekend Confirmed versus some of the other 1UP guys? How did Christine, who isn't really into industry, who's Christine? Christine.
Oh, do you remember her from the first few episodes? And then we fired her, and there was that whole scene with Christine.
Is this like Spotless?
You guys don't
remember Christine?
It's like
an evil car that would like.
Is this a Spotless Mind moment?
You don't remember? Oh my God, Christine. She was hilarious.
Yeah.
So anyway, just some of the challenges, disappointments, and what we want to do different than other gaming podcasts out there, like Hotspot, Giant Bomb. Well, look, I mean, how Jeff got involved is. I really like Jeff.
We all really like Jeff. He's so likable.
He's a teddy bear.
He befriended me a long, long time ago when I still lived in San Francisco, and we always wanted to do something together. And, you know, by the good fortune of Gamefly hiring me and my moving to Los Angeles, we had the opportunity to do this together. And it was one of the first things, like one of the very first things that came to mind for me was, I am running my own show as editorial director. I want to do this.
Yeah.
And I reached out to Jeff, and he was like, hell yeah, I want to do this. And
yeah, absolutely. It was a privilege to be a part of this. Absolutely. No, I kid you not, man.
And now we feed each other
cake. I started out as a fan, absolutely, of you.
That's
and what
sweet.
You do.
Didn't you start out doing like geocaching stuff?
Oh, we did do some geocaching.
So I took, by the way, I took her while we were in San Francisco over to Levi Park, and I sort of like.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was kind of awesome. Do
that was
people
a fun
still
day.
Geocache?
Hell yeah, people Probably. Still geocache. It's awesome.
That seems like so 5 years ago.
Well, it's because that was the one and only time we did it.
But yeah, I mean, we've had a great time putting the show together. I mean, obviously, we've had some great folks on the show.
Yeah.
Brian was here for a first year with us. He was a really awesome hardcore perspective. Obviously, new StarCraft, new Dota, new fighting games, really kept us on our toes. Zav, who's just recently moved over to Joystick again, had a great time with him here. Obviously, we have regular folks like the lovely Andrea Renee here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Brings great element to it. Obviously, Jeff and Ariel are here right now.
Yep.
Spicer, who left us today, couldn't make it because we weren't important enough for his busy schedule.
That's right. You know what? He just didn't want to face me face to face.
I know. You would have manned him down.
He was.
But I mean, what were some of the things that you thought of when I first approached you as far as what could we do with this show? What would be cool?
Well, I remember that that lunch meeting that we had in Santa Monica when you were kind of pitching the idea and throwing around concepts, and it was you and me and Brian, and it was the first time I met Brian, and I was really excited. You had just moved down here, and you're kind of getting your bearings at Shack and setting up shop there, and I was very impressed with the fact that you were simultaneously putting together this show and also kind of restructuring their whole editorial, and it was a huge undertaking for you, as well as relocating to a completely new part of the state, which is a huge move. And it was really fun to kind of throw around ideas and figure out stuff. And we were coming up with different things that we could bring to it. I mean, I think that was when Kanata Ford got first.
That was when
suggested.
Yeah. Which people want to bring that. The people want to bring that back. We should figure out how to bring that back this year.
That was literally Kanata Ford when I first started doing Weekend Confirmed. That was on the show notes forever. Like it listed on the paper, and I was always like, "How come we never do this segment? It's listed that we're supposed to be doing it."
That's
I don't
really doesn't like
see Andrea. The problem with no, the problem with. They too are anachronisms. The problem I have is that every time I try to do something that's planned out ahead of time, is it works for a show or two, and then people get busy, and something doesn't happen, and you get to the planned part of the show, and they're like,
"Eh."
I think this. I mean,
wait, I don't know what that means. How could you not plan? Cannot afford.
Because it because I have to you have to come prepared to the show ready to give us your Kanata Ford.
That's one thing.
Well,
people can't do one thing for the show. I was ready.
To put it a different way, that
what did you miss out
better.
That you wanted to serve up?
It was too. It was like, that was like a. That was almost exactly
Mass Effect
a year
2,
ago.
Garnet.
Like I love Trapped. Trapped was amazing.
No way, dude! I bought 3 copies of that. Clearly, I could afford it.
When Angry Birds came
I
out,
I think though
man.
To put it a different way. One of the things that you do very well and you're very smart about with this show and every iteration of shows that you've ever done is to be very conscious of the fact that to follow the conversation where it naturally goes and to understand that what's always paramount is to have people who are comfortable with each other engaging in conversation that they're comfortable with and letting that have its own life rather than imposing. You know, we've tried a lot of different kinds of structure with the show, and some have worked better than others, and some have stayed, and some have gone, and I think that's to your credit that you're smart enough to see that the show really lives and dies by the strength of the relationships
you know,
of the people.
Yeah, asking about like things that I find challenging that I enjoy is one of them is always keeping the show dynamic. You know, I've been doing it now for
a while,
6 or 7 years, and it is. I was thinking. We had 100th episode on 1UP as well, and I think we were close to 200. Like at some point, there will be enough of these podcasts that I've hosted that you could listen to.
To circumnavigate the globe.
You could listen to one every day. That would be insane. Listen to one weird. Every day. That would be crazy.
Lay each podcast end to end, and you can reach the sun.
But, you know, in between all of the trolling and upsetness, like there's a lot of times that the audience is good at calling out bullshit on us. You know, for instance, definitely about a year ago, we were way too structured. I was trying too hard to, you know, control conversations and make it into something, you know, more structured. And I think that it's definitely recaptured some of the fun vibe and it's gotten back on track and people seem to like it again.
Well, I think
of course they'll hate
like
this
it.
One. Yeah. They'll be like, you guys, you don't know what you're doing with this one. So, you know, I hope we have answered that question. Was there anything else? Disappointments? I don't know.
There have been a few.
Christine,
but then again.
Poor Christine.
Few to mention. Right. No, Christine's been lost.
She was a huge disappointment.
Oh, my God.
She was terrible.
Well,
it
all
Christine?
Fell apart, like,
she was
right away.
You could completely ignore her. It was like she wasn't even there.
I know.
She almost never showed up.
Pretty much. Did she ever show up?
She kind of faded into the background all the time.
I wish I knew who he was even talking about. Like 414, I don't even know who Christine is supposed to be. I can't really guess. Who is Christine supposed to be?
Christine. Don't get me started on her.
Christine! 16!
Get me started on it. Anyway. Remember that time when she was talking?
That was the best.
Isn't it? That was so insightful.
Remember that thing she said and then that way she like looked afterwards?
Right, and then, yeah.
And then the way we all felt?
And everybody agreed.
It was amazing.
So that was a common thread throughout the questions. How did we approach the original cast about starting of the podcast? And what were their reactions? Was from Simpy 101, which I think we kind of answered. What are we going to do next? We haven't answered that. What are we going to do next? What are we going to do in 2012?
Live stream.
I think that's a great idea, actually.
Unfortunately, the studio facilities here have the internet production facility of 1997.
Yeah.
It's just inside the studio, unfortunately.
No, actually, the connectivity to the building is really poor also.
Yeah, okay.
So. Because one of the things we would like to have done, and if we get to a point where we do it, is one of the things we'd like to add is a live chat room. Because I think it would be pretty fun to have, you know, Dave in the booth reading you guys' tweets or a live chat room, you know,
awesome.
Chat room where we could interact with you guys during
the
show.
I'll tell you what, I loved these recorded bits that we put into this episode. And if we could figure out a way to have more... you know, listener interaction, listener audio components, I think that'd be great.
Yeah, so obviously, if you listen to the show a couple episodes ago, we did a pilot piece from Steve Watts, who's my news reporter, or our news reporter out on the East Coast. And that was sort of seeing how it worked. It worked great. So I was like, okay, works. Let's do it. We've got it figured out. Let's move forward. And I'd love to have you guys continue to contribute in that way. We do the pre-show videos. You know, I hope people are watching those.
I hope so too. It's fun.
Shaq News Hotline, perhaps.
Shaq News Hotline.
You got to get more alluring thumbnails. That's the key.
More alluring thumbnails.
You got to get a girl in a bikini in your thumbnail.
Oh dear.
Sounds like somebody volunteered.
That's the secret.
That's how YouTube works. Yeah.
And cats.
All right, Andrea, go get your bikini. We know you brought it
all
with you.
All right. Well, which one do you want?
And bring a kitty cat that does something human-like, and we'll, we'll make it get a billion hits.
Well.
And cake. Bring more cake.
So.
Jack a kid up on drugs.
Set him loose.
Go-go juice. It's all about the go-go juice.
Van Dieven Der Dan.
Gesundheit.
Screen names are hard to say. It's okay.
I'm not sure where you're supposed to. Where would you break that? Because there's lots of vowels and lots of consonants.
I would say Van Der Dan.
Yeah, you've got it too. Awesome. Score one.
It's Van Deventer Dan. His last name is Van Deventer.
I want to see this.
Interesting thing though to talk about when we have this sort of thing.
I think you did too.
What's been the most amazing and biggest change in video games over the course of the show?
The biggest change in video games?
Yeah.
What's motion? Really,
motions. Okay, so we saw Kinect come onto the scene
2 years ago. No, it's been longer than that. So,
yeah.
Touch screens.
Touch screens. I think you make a great argument for touch screens.
Yeah.
Voice interaction.
Van Der Denter Dan.
Well,
we're in 4 minutes.
Tonight.
Mr. Ed Dursey is saying the iPhone and the rise of iPhone gaming. I would say there's a great argument there, obviously.
Yeah. Well,
that's
where I was kind of going with touch screens.
Well, especially in the independent gaming development.
That's huge. Micro gaming.
Yeah, Jeff, you bring up a great point. One of the biggest motivations for me to finally move over to iPhone was I wanted to be involved in all these great indie games that are coming up.
Wait, you have an iPhone now?
Yeah.
Wait, what happened to the Galaxy?
I moved iPhone.
I'm about to go to iPhone too.
And one of the key reasons is there's a tremendous amount of indie game development energy around the iOS platform because it's a great place to still self-publish. It's a great place to get involved and just turn a prototype into a game very quickly and be seen and get engaged. And it might not be the be-all and end-all project of your life, but then I'm really impressed by the level of maturity we're already seeing in development on that platform.
Actually,
the maturation of the iOS platform would probably be my biggest one over the last year. And how quickly, though I do agree with some of the commenters about the difference in experience, how quickly it has eaten into the traditional handheld market. Mm-hmm. What about you guys?
I think we're talking about kind of like larger gaming trends.
Yep.
Obviously, the free-to-play movement. That's just exploded.
That's a good point. You're talking about, so if you want to talk about the next 100 episodes, I am really, really curious to see what happens in free-to-play and microtransaction. The economy of games is going to change whether publishers like it or not.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before we move on to finishing moves, I want to wrap it with one little piece of news because we had a friend of mine, David Jaffe, on, and Twisted Metal is out now. And unfortunately, you know, Jeff, you didn't get a chance to argue with him about this, but I'm troubled by the entirety of the way the whole Twisted Metal thing went down. And the be-all and end-all of this was the interview that he did with Game Informer where he said, you know, I always thought it was going to be a great game, but we weren't nursing these illusions that we were making Call of Duty in terms of sales. If it's big enough hit, I'm sure Sony won't let it wither on the vine. But right now, there's no plans at all. There's no DLC plans. There's no sequel or expansion plans. We'll have to wait to see how it does. Okay, you always have to wait to see how it does, but Twisted Metal.
He's on to other things.
Yeah.
He's done.
Not to mention the fact that with something like DLC, if it's not in development by the time the game has come out, then it's going to be months and months until we're going to see anything.
It's not going to happen.
Teams are probably broken up, although I do know that they're obviously, they have like their maintenance contract where they need to fix bugs that come up. And
I would say that is something that is decided based on tracking that happens long before the game comes out.
Probably.
It's not, it's not a surprise to anybody, I would imagine. If they have a certain expectation for the title and they can see that a DLC would yield them X dollars or Y dollars and... You know, that's just the way
but
it is.
But in a space such as vehicle, Vehicle combat, but I mean, think about Gran Turismo, Forza, and
yeah, but this is vehicle arena shooter, you know, combat game. This
there's
is
plenty
not...
of DLC and other shooters. Yeah, I'm just saying that it was really the final final period on exactly how much Twisted Metal had just sort of been left to just be okay. Well, there you go, guys. Bye. See, like later.
Well, there's an argument to be made that they realized all the potential of that series. You know,
you think
back in the
okay.
day. Yeah, like, I mean, like, what are they, I mean, what is this new one bringing to the table that everybody's like, whoa, I can't believe they didn't think of that before.
That's a great point.
You know,
it's a great point. It's more of a throwback.
It's like, here's an opportunity to play, and you see this a lot in video games, more so than movies, because you can't go back and play a game from, like, 1985 without crazy, you know, emulator stuff. Or
right.
whatever. You know, it's like, it's.
And even when you do, the display technology has changed so much, you're
right.
like, ugh.
And you're like, oh, this looks bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Hence all the ports you get. Interesting point, but two out of two, you know, Jeffs hate Twisted Metal.
Well,
I don't know if I hate
word,
it, but
it's a harsh word.
I'm just trolling you.
It has its place.
I mean, but you see something. Compare that to what they did with Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter IV, where they give you the throwback experience, and then it's like, wow, they really built on that base.
They reimagined it. I mean, in fairness, I have not played the new Twisted Metal, so I don't know. Maybe there is some things in there, that
and I haven't played the release version, but, so.
All right, so you know how we wrap these things up. We are at the end of episode 100 and ready for our 100th finishing move.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
Boom. Jeff Cannata, finish them.
Happy 100, everybody. I have a 100-themed finishing move. I was very happy, very proud when, like, literally the week after, I was clamoring for Bioshock Infinite was released. I had no inside information about that. It just sort of was a weird serendipity.
Bragging. You're just bragging.
I was really stoked seeing the thing that I begged for on this show in Skyrim, the Kinect-enabled shouts to be shown in the sizzle reel at DICE.
Va-voom!
Yeah. So, and I would just like to say, in celebration of our 100th episode, I got some inside information that I absolutely cannot share. So I know this is a bit of a sleeve tease. I apologize. But there is something else, if you go back over 100 episodes, that I really clamored for that is absolutely happening that I'm really excited about that you guys will be finding out at some point relatively soon.
And it's not Dear Story the game.
So I would love, you know, I wish I could tell you more, but it's really awesome and I'm very excited about it.
Okay.
So I'm 3 for 3. I'm just bragging on the other episode.
Just bragging.
There's 3 things that I kind of called.
There you go. All right. He's got to duck out of here because he's headed over to the Falcon Theater where you can catch Jeff through March
4th.
In the production of
Dissonance,
where he's playing a rock star.
Yes, indeed.
Which is kind of a perfect fit. Have a great time. Break a leg.
Thanks,
Hope
guys.
It's a great performance.
Happy 100. It was
Bye.
Fun.
See ya.
And as always,
right.
Catch Jeff on
Bye,
the
Jeff.
Totally Rad Show every day of the week on Revision 3 and on YouTube. Thanks, Jeff. See you next time. Jeff Mattis, you're up.
Well, my finishing move is about deer.
Oh, by the way, also tell Jeff Cannata in the booth. Tell Jeff Cannata to come get his sweater.
Oh, yeah. He left his sweater here.
Jeff Mattis.
So, yes, my finishing move is about Dear Esther. It is a remake of a Half-Life 2 mod that just came out on Steam, officially sanctioned by Valve. It is very unique. It is narrative-driven and a narrative-driven adventure, and it's very short, but very beautiful and very poetic and very cool. So if you're interested in any of those three attributes, check it out.
Now, it sounds like a good one. Ariel, would you like to be up next?
Sure. I've been playing 3 amazing games recently.
Number one.
One's a little ditty from the UK called Sherlock. It's great. The second series is out. Actually, I don't think it's technically out.
It's not a game.
I'm not encouraging. Shit. I shouldn't have said that. It's great. And the second one is called Downton Abbey, which I highly recommend. And the third one
is... Wait, that's a movie, isn't it?
It's a TV series. Also from the UK. And then the third one is called It by Stephen King, which I'm currently reading. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it is very good.
It's good. I can't put it down.
Can I throw in a side note related to It? I'm reading the new Stephen King book about the JFK going back in time to fix the JFK assassination, and there are actually references that he makes.
He makes all sorts of references.
Yeah, it's great.
And the Dark Tower series, if you haven't read it, is a must.
iPad Andrea, what's up from your finishing move?
Well, my finishing move just has to be a gigantic thank you to all of the fans and listeners of We Can Confirm for kind of welcoming me into the We Can Confirm family. I know that a lot of your listeners sometimes don't agree with what I have to say or have not so nice things to say about me on NeoGAF, and that's fine. You can troll me as much as you want. But I do really appreciate all the support that people have gotten or given me over the last year. It's been a year, pretty much.
There you go.
I've been.
Andrea is here to stay.
Yeah.
And you will hopefully see much more of me in the gaming space in the years to come. So thank you for a great run. I hope to continue it.
So it's my honor to wrap this thing up as the big host with a number of thank yous, of course. 100th episode, pretty fantastic. I won't say that I wasn't confident that we'd get there because, you know, I thought we had a great show. I thought we had a great pitch, great idea for a show, great creative team here.
It's an impressive achievement, though.
And it is fantastic to have arrived here. So I want to start off thanking Gamefly and Gamefly Media for backing the show. It is not an inexpensive endeavor. We put this show on week in and week out, and we have obviously a great studio facility here, and it's all by virtue of the support that has been extended by Gamefly without really any question. There's no, you've got to do this, you got to do that. It's been an unequivocal, just blanket support for the creative endeavor, and that's been super empowering, and I really appreciate that. And then also to Brooklyn and everyone here at the Atlantis Group who has produced
Brooklyn
this show.
Brooklyn has done
a fantastic job, whether it's when we're on the road or in Dave's apartment or obviously here in these fantastic studios. Just without them, you wouldn't hear the fidelity and quality of this show that we get week in and week out. That's fantastic. And then another big part of that, of course, is the production that Dave goes to every week to make sure that everything is organized.
Del Rio!
Yeah, Del Rio.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Great support from all of our guests, of course, whether they be regulars like Andrea and Christian Spicer and Plan B, who's moved up to the Pacific Northwest. Billy, we miss you, brother. We miss you.
I bet Christine is Christian.
Oh, Christine could be Christian. That's right. Could be.
Mystery solved.
Could be. You are correct. Or any of the other folks who've come on. You know, we've had great support from the development community. We get tons of feedback email from you guys who are out there working day in and day out, making the games that we love and say that, you know, telling us that you listen to us. And that's fantastic. And I really appreciate that. And then above all else, every one of you who's listening right now, because the whole reason the show exists is because you are out there and you listen to us and support us. And, you know, I know a number of you have said that I sometimes pay too much attention to the bad guys on the forums or whatever. But, you know, look, without you guys listening, there wouldn't be a Weekend Confirmed. So thank you so very much. And I look forward to another 100 so we can do this on the 200th show. And I was promised strippers for the 200 shows.
There will be a video live stream of Ariel and I feeding each other cake.
In.
If you ask for it, we'll do it.
In. That's all I got to say is in. So, folks, we need more support. Tell your friends that We Can Confirm is awesome so we can hit the numbers and get to show number 200. It'll be worth your while.
We have goals to reach.
So there you go. On that note, thank you very much. That is your Weekend Confirmed for the 100th time. Until 101, we're a ghost.
This is Runner Matt from the Shack Forums, wishing the entire Weekend Confirmed crew a happy 100th episode. As you may have guessed by the name, I have run with you for literally hundreds, if not thousands of miles, and I always look forward to a new show to get me out the door. Thanks, and here's to many more.
Hey, We Can Confirm. This is DLR Alex. I want to say congratulations on your 100th episode. I hope to hear 100 more.
Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard that you know we play harder.
Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going on. Body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready.
We Can Confirm is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.